Hey,
are you listening?
When you find yourself in danger, when you're threatened by a stranger, when it looks like you will take a licking, there is someone waiting who will hurry up and rescue you. Just call
OTR Rob.
Rob, calling in for your bus, 137569. Grab a pencil and a notepad and take this down.
Oh, you!
And what, pray tell, is wrong with you, F?
Oh, nothing.
Good. Now take this down. There are two radio blocks of detectives. Detective couples. Which includes Nick Carter, The Adventures of Ellery Queen, Mr. and Mrs. North, and Let George Do It, all within the Jack Benny Podcast Network. And the other detective radio block is Popular Detectives, which includes Sam Spade, Michael Shane, Pat Novak for Hire, and Jeff Regan. Private investigator for The Lion's Eye. Enjoy all of these over on the Jack Benny Podcast. I hope you got that down, Effie.
Oh, you!
Hey, everyone, this is OTR Rob welcoming you to Richard Diamond, Private Detective. This episode is from August 20th, 1949. The episode is entitled The Gene Cooper Murder Case. And enjoy all of that, including Rocky Fortune, The Saint, and The New Adventures of Nero Wolf. I'm going to throw in one additional episode that I'm going to be presenting this fall when I bring a block of detective shows in the fall. God willing, and the creeks don't rise, is going to be Rocky Jordan. Not Rocky Fortune, but Rocky Jordan. And I'll give you a taste of that, very much like Casablanca, only on steroids. Enjoy all of these shows, and I'll see you all back here next week.
Here is another in NBC's great parade of new shows. As Richard Diamond, Private Detective.
Hello there, this is Diamond. You know, there are a lot of people in a big city like this, good ones and bad ones. They walk down Broadway and rub elbows and you can't tell them apart. Why can't you? Because a lot of them were poured out of the same mold, brought up in the middle of garbage cans and gang wars. Weaned on the smell of slums and conditioned to the taste of dirt and a kick in the ribs. By the time they get old enough to raise their fist, they're given two choices. Two ways to beat the gang wars and garbage cans. One guy picks himself up, shakes off the filth, and jumps over on the right side of the fence. The other guy picks himself up, too. But when he does, he raises that fist and shakes it at the whole world because he wants things the easy way. He continues to shake his fist until someone shoves a gun in it. Then he's a swaggering giant. Sometimes he climbs over with his little bag of rot and hides in the lap of society. But take away the gun and he ends up right back in the middle of the garbage cans with his face in the dirt. What about the guy on the right side of the fence? Well, you rarely ever hear of him unless he becomes president or gets mixed up with the guy on the wrong side of the fence. Like the case I bumped into a couple of days ago. It all started in Central Park.
What happened?
Some girl got run over. That young guy over there ran over with his car.
I came up right after it happened. He was leaning over her and crying. A little late for crying, I'd say.
Says he didn't kill her. Says someone pushed her in front of his car. Ain't that a good one?
All right, everybody back. Here comes the ambulance. Come on, you.
But I tell you, I didn't kill her. I was in love with her.
That's the last thing you should have said.
But I swear I didn't do it. I was going to meet her about a half a block up the street, and someone pushed her out in front of my car. I couldn't stop in time.
Look, I just got to write a report and take you down to the station. You can tell it to the inspector. Now look out. Here's the ambulance.
Hello, Crockett.
You're too late. The body's ready for the morgue.
Ah, Central Park's turning into a graveyard. I'm going to start taking my girl someplace else.
What do you mean? Somebody else got run over in the park?
Somebody got shot full of holes. Call came in just for this one. That gangster, Chino Scarbo?
Scarbo got knocked off.
He was dope, wasn't he?
Please, officer, can't I get to a phone?
Shut up. One of the biggest gangsters in town gets rubbed out, and I gotta show up at the station with you. You know, Sonny, I'm not pleased with you at all.
Diamond Detective Agency, corpses designed with you in mind.
Greg.
Oh, hello, Helen, baby.
Where do you get all those awful slogans?
Ghost Rider. Ho, ho, ho. Get it?
Rick.
Wasn't a riot?
No, Rick. Was a bomb.
Oh. Okay, maybe this will get a yuck. Oh, here's a beaut. Are you lonely? Join the Lonely Souls Club and find your perfect soulmate. All ages. Guarantee satisfaction or money refunded. I wonder if Mighty Joe Young knows about this.
Rick, what are you talking about?
I'm reading the personals. Hey, get a load of this one. Will give ride to coast, must be young companion, pretty, easy on the eyes. Think I ought to apply, baby?
You're ridiculous.
Well, here's an odd one. Anyone witnessing unusual accident at the 72nd Street Transverse, 11 p.m. Wednesday night, when young girl was killed, called Skyler 6036. Urgent.
That's in Central Park.
Yeah, somebody's got troubles.
Mr. Diamond?
Hold it a minute, baby. Yeah, I'm Diamond. What can I do for you?
I want to hire you.
Helen?
Yes, I know. Bye.
$100 a day in expenses, sir.
That's your fee?
Yep. I like to give it to the prospective client first. If he turns green and faints, we both save a lot of time and talk. How do you feel?
About the fee? Fine.
Well, what else is bothering you?
My son is being held on a manslaughter charge.
Well, if he kills somebody, that's a job for the police.
But he didn't do it intentionally. The girl was shoved in front of his car.
That's his story.
Yes, it is. And I believe him.
Hmm? Who was the girl, and why do you think anyone would want to kill her?
Her name was Jean Cooper. My son was in love with her. Why anyone would want to kill her, I really can't say.
Uh-huh. Your name and your son's name, where he's being held?
My name is Cook, Earl Cook. My son's name is Tom. He's at the 5th Precinct Police Station.
Oh, wouldn't you know it?
I beg your pardon?
Forget it. What's your business, Mr. Cook?
Politics.
Where can I reach you?
I live at 261 Riverside Drive. My phone is Skyler 6036.
Hey, wait a minute.
What's the matter?
I don't know. That phone number's familiar. Where did your son run over this girl, Mr. Cook?
The 72nd Street Transverse.
11 o'clock Wednesday night?
Why, yes. How did you know?
I read the papers. Is this your ad in the personal column?
Yes. Yes, it is. You see, the police claim there were no witnesses, but I had hopes that there might have been someone who had seen the accident.
Well, if anyone called you, let me know. Now, I'll take $100, Mr. Cook. That's a retainer in case I run into trouble and have to get buried in a hurry. I hate to strain my relatives. He wrote me out a check, and I closed the office and headed for the 5th Precinct Police Station. An automobile death isn't exactly up my alley, but if someone had pushed the girl out in front of the car, then it was murder. And that was a territory I knew my way around in. Well, good morning, Sergeant Otis.
Where did you come from, Shamus?
Sugar and spice and everything nice.
Huh?
That's what little boys are made of.
You're crazy. That's what little girls are made of.
Why, Sergeant, you peeked.
You want to see the lieutenant?
I think that would be lovely.
Go on in.
Otis.
Huh?
I just had a horrible thought.
Yeah?
Wouldn't it be awful if there was a whole room full of you? Hello, Walt.
Diamond, you get out of here. Every time you wander into this office, I grow another ulcer.
Why, Walt, I'm surprised at you.
Well, you wouldn't be if you had to listen to Otis bellyaching all over the precinct 12 hours a day. Why don't you leave that poor guy alone?
Don't listen to him.
Don't listen to him? How can I help it? He screams so loud only dogs can get with it.
Have you got a boy booked here on the manslaughter charge, Tom Cook?
Yes, we have. I knew darn good and well you'd be springing something before you'd sit down and act like a normal human being. What do you want Cook for? He ran over a dame last night, and that's that. Maybe you want to give him a driving lesson?
You're turning blue again, Walt.
I'll light up like a pinball machine if you don't start giving me some peace and quiet.
Can I see Cook?
No, you can't.
Well, why not?
I know you. You'll end up by proving he wasn't even in the city last night. Before the day is gone, we'll be booking Otis for the killing.
Did he do it?
Who?
Otis.
Now, you stop that. Don't you dare start that routine again. I'm the biggest sucker in the world for that thing, and I admit it, but I am prepared. I know who's on first base today.
Who?
Williams. He's playing for... Otis!
Yeah, Lieutenant?
Yeah, Lieutenant. Yeah, Lieutenant. Is that all you can say? Take Diamond down to see that guy Cook. And if you let him back in this office, I'll break every bone in your fat head.
Yeah, Lieutenant.
Oh. Where is that bicarbonate?
By Walt. I left Walt coming on like Vesuvius, and Otis took me down in the tombs to see Tom Cook. Cook was a man about 25 or 26, put together like a high jumper. He had sandy hair and a nice face. Also, he looked pretty worried.
I tell you, Mr. Diamond, I didn't intentionally run over Jean. She called and asked me to meet her in the park.
Why?
Well, we always met there.
Oh. You say she was pushed in front of the car?
Well, that's what it looked like. There were some bushes right near the sidewalk. She came flying out of them and fell in front of me before I could put on the brakes.
What did she want to see you about?
It was personal.
Now, look. You're up on a manslaughter charge. You can get a lot of time for that. Now, what did she want to see you about?
I can't tell you. I just can't tell you. It would ruin someone.
It's going to wreck you if you don't.
Then it'll have to.
Okay. Did she have any enemies at all? Boyfriends, girlfriends, ex-husbands, jealous ice men?
She had an ex-husband.
When did she separate from him?
About a year ago. Why? Do you think maybe Cooper was jealous?
Is his name Cooper?
Yes, John Cooper.
Oh, live in town?
Well, he was living at 498 West 81st Street, but that was a year ago.
Okay. Tell me where your girl was living.
383 Madison Avenue, apartment 206. She was living under her married name, Cooper.
Sure you don't want to tell me what she wanted to see you about?
I can't, Mr. Diamond.
Okay, but I hope the person you're protecting appreciates it. 5 years in Sing Sing is stretching loyalty a long way.
This person's worth it.
Otis, let me out of here. You locked me up with a Boy Scout.
Yes?
Mr. Cook?
Yes? Who is this?
This is Diamond.
Diamond, I'm so glad you phoned.
Oh?
Remember my ad in the personal columns?
Yes.
Well, I just received a call from someone who claims he saw a man push a girl in front of my son's car.
Oh.
He said he was in a hurry, so he didn't wait around to see the rest. Can you imagine that? In too much of a hurry to stay round.
No, I can't imagine, unless he was running away from something, didn't want to be caught. Did he tell you anything else?
No, I asked his name, but he hung up.
Oh. Well, if you hear from him again, call Lieutenant Levinson of the 5th Precinct. And I'll call you later.
All right, Mr. Diamond. But now I'm sure my son is innocent.
Well, I hope I can come up with more than your confidence. I knew a guy who yelled frame all the way to the electric chair. They fried him like a lean pork chop. I left the phone booth and took off for John Cooper's apartment. I found the place and gave my rabbit's foot a pat on the hock. The little bunny was still with me because a John Cooper was listed on the mailboxes. I took the steps two at a time.
Yeah, who is it?
The name's Diamond.
I don't want any.
I'm selling a homicide, complete with samples. You better open up.
Hey, what are you talking about?
I'm talking about your ex-wife. She was killed last night.
What?
Mind if I come in?
No, come on in. Jean dead. How did it happen?
She was run over by a car.
Oh, that's awful. Are you from the police?
You get a gold star. Where were you at 11 o'clock Wednesday night?
I was right here in my apartment.
You can prove it?
Well, I didn't leave. I don't guess I can prove it. I hope you don't think I ran over Jean.
I know who ran over. I'm trying to find out who aimed her.
I don't understand.
She was pushed in front of the car.
How do you know that?
Why shouldn't I know that?
Well, I don't know. I guess you should.
When was the last time you saw your ex-wife?
Oh, about 8 months ago. We didn't get along, so we didn't speak after we split up.
You haven't seen her since?
No.
Were you jealous of her new boyfriend?
Jealous? Why should I be?
Good question. I'll see you later, Mr. Cooper.
Yeah. I hope I've been of some help.
You've been dandy. I left Cooper pinning up his gold star and headed for the dead girl's apartment. I knew the law had already been there and that it would probably be locked tighter than a wine truck on Skid Row. I found the landlady's door and gave it a jolt.
Yeah? Oh, what do you want?
I'm looking for the landlady.
You want an apartment? We got one coming up in a couple of days. The dame that was in it croaked. You can pay in advance if you want it.
Can I take a look at it?
Nah. Lousy coppers told me not to let anyone in. You got my word, it's a good one.
Oh, well then, you'd better let me talk to your mother.
My mother? My old lady's been dead for 20 years.
She has? Aren't you a little young to be running an apartment all by yourself?
Hey, sonny.
Yeah?
How old do you think I am?
Well, it's hard to tell. I'd say, about 28.
Come on, I'll show you the apartment. But watch those steps. I think you could use some glasses. Right up here, handsome.
Was the poor girl who died married?
Used to be, but she got divorced. Here it is. There you are, honey. Go on in, take a look around. I'll go on back downstairs in case the law comes back. I'll have to stall them, I guess.
Thanks, beautiful.
Oh, that's all right, honey. When you're done, stop in at my place and I'll give you a drink of gin.
I waited until I heard the old bat fly down the stairs, and then I took the place apart. It took me exactly 10 minutes, and even if I do say so, it was a pretty neat job. I was on the last lap, going through the wastebaskets, when I spotted something on the magazine stand. It was just below eye level. It was a late issue of a magazine, and it was addressed to Mr. John Cooper, 498 West 81st Street. I grabbed it and picked up the phone.
Homicide, Sergeant Otis.
Oh, this is Wooly. Wish you talking to Lieutenant Levinson?
Oh, how are you, Wooly? Get it for you, chop chop. Pretty good, huh?
Oh, very fine. Chop chop. Your head, maybe.
Huh?
Wooly say very fine. You speak very fine Chinese.
Oh. Lieutenant Levinson.
Oh, this is Diamond Walt.
It is. I told Otis I didn't want to talk to you. He said Wooly was on the pipe.
Oh, this is Wooly too, Walt.
Oh, that lame brain, Otis. Well, what is it now, Diamond?
I got a liar in the balcony, Walt.
What are you talking about?
I've spoken to three people about the girl that was run over. One of them lied to me. Now, I believe the kid's story. I think she was pushed.
So she was pushed. I can't be bothered with that right now. I'm all tangled up in the Scarbo killing. We found the gun that did the job lying in the bushes in Central Park.
Wait a minute. In Central Park?
Yeah, we traced it to a pawn shop, and the pawnbroker identified one Louis Spiegel as the one that bought the gun.
Walt, what time was Scarbo knocked off?
Shots were heard about 5 minutes to 11. Hey, that's just about the same time that Cook ran over the girl.
You are so right, and Scarbo got killed on the other side of the park. About 5 minutes to run to where the girl got run over.
Now, what are you getting at? If you know something about this Scarbo killing,
some guy called Tom Cook's father and said he saw the girl shoved in front of the car. He wouldn't tell his name because he said he'd get in trouble.
Probably a crank. No one would duck out on a deliberate murder.
Unless he'd just rubbed out New York's biggest gangster.
Hey.
Yeah. Have you got Louis Spiegel on tap?
No, he's hiding out.
Oh. Well, do me a favor. Check your files and see if you've got a record on a John Cooper.
The dead girl's ex-husband?
Yeah, then I'll call you back. I've got a guy who might show us where we can find Louis Spiegel and the guy who pushed the girl in front of the car.
We killed two birds with one stone.
It's quite a billiard shot, but give my little stool pigeon 2 bottles of fermented grape juice and he can run the table. I left the apartment and slipped by the landlady's door. I knew she was building a party because I could smell the 100-proof clear out in the hall. I ducked out on the street and headed for Skid Row in a place called the Parrot Club. When I went in, I spotted my man sitting in his usual spot at the bar. His name was Wilbur Truitt.
Greetings, Bucko. You have come just in the nick. Not having the necessary funds to purchase another bottle of strength, I asked yon bartender to put it on the cuff.
Wilbur,
whereupon he handed me this can of rat poison. Oh. It turned out to be rather soothing in a toxic sort of way. Bucko, you know me. I do not wish to deprive the little rodents of their daily constitution, so I would much rather nurse on the succulent end of a bottle.
Wilbur, I'm looking for someone.
I have been looking for someone all my life, preferably a brewery owner.
Bartender, bring me a bottle.
Oh, Noble sir, your over-kindness doth wring tears from me. I do embrace your offer.
Now, you don't wrap your hooks around this jug until I find out where Louis Spiegel is.
That is indeed a difficult problem. Mr. Spiegel carried a rather large gun under his arm. Then if I sit here and gaze at that bottle for any great period, I shall become cotton-mouthed and surely choke to death. Mr. Louis Spiegel might be found in the freight yards, hiding in an old shack at the end of 50th Street. Now, Bucko, I'm rusting.
Here you are, Wilbur, and thanks.
Farewell. Lord knows when we shall meet again. I have faint, cold fear thrills through my veins. But no matter. I have never let a cork confuse me before. Bartender, a corkscrew, and bring the cat. I owe him a drink.
Homicide, Lieutenant Levinson.
Diamond, Walt, what did you find out?
John Cooper has no record.
Uh-oh.
But George Kingsley has.
Oh, alias?
Yeah. George Kingsley, alias John Cooper, did 10 years for embezzlement.
Oh, fine. Thanks, Walt. Now, here's the pitch. Lou Spiegel is in a shack in the freight yards at the end of 49th Street, North River. Get some men to surround the place and have Otis pick up John Cooper and bring him down there. I'll be there in half an hour and give you a couple of killers. All I needed was a motive, so I hung up the phone and headed for the house of my client, Earl Cook.
Oh, come in, Mr. Diamond. I'm very glad you've come.
Mr. Cook, did you...
I want to show you something. Here.
What are they?
Letters to my son. Blackmail letters.
Oh? Where'd you find them?
I was going through my son's things, trying to find something that might help uncover the motive for his accident.
Mind if I take a look?
Well, I can save you the trouble. They're about me.
About you?
Yes. I told you I'm in politics. Well, I am, and I'm a big power. When I began my rise, I was a young criminal lawyer. I had to accept a lot of cases that I might have turned down under different circumstances.
I see.
And the opposition tried everything to discredit me. Smear campaigns. Saying that I was getting acquittals for common thugs who were known to be guilty. Later, when I became a judge, they switched the campaign and said that the men I sentenced were innocent.
Were they?
Of course not. But in those letters to my son, the blackmailer said that he had definite proof that could ruin me. My son knew about my past, and when he started receiving the letters, he was afraid to confront me with the evidence for fear I might have to admit my dishonesty.
Have you talked with your son?
I just left him. That's why he didn't tell you anything. He thought he was protecting me. His girl, Jean, found out who was sending him the letters and, well, she was killed before she could tell him.
Well, that fits. If the girl found out, then the blackmailer would not only have to know your son pretty well, but he'd also have to know her.
You think you know who he is?
See this magazine?
Mm-hmm.
Well, some of the pages are cut up. Now, take a look at these blackmail notes. They're formed with cut-out letters to spell out the words.
Mm.
The type is the same as the type on the magazine.
Where did you get that magazine?
In the girl's apartment.
Well, then she must have had something to do with it.
She found the magazine, all right, but it wasn't hers. Look, Mr. Cook.
Yes?
Did you ever send a man to prison named Kingsley?
Yes, I believe so. For embezzling.
Ah, thanks.
Where are you going?
I'll call you later. I've got a date at the freight yard.
Oh, hello, Rick. We've got Spiegel boxed up. He's in that shack down there.
Yeah, will he come out?
If he does, it'll be feet first.
Well, I guess he'd rather have it that way. Any shooting?
He tried a couple, but I had the boys hold their fire until you got here.
I see. Where's John Cooper?
Otis hasn't showed up with him yet.
Let me use your loudspeaker, Walt.
Oh, sure, go ahead, but keep your head down.
Spiegel! Spiegel! Lou!
Why, that lowlife, I'll blast him to kingdom come.
Hold it, Walt. Spiegel knows me.
Louis! Louis, this is Diamond. I want to talk with you.
You better get out of here, Diamond. It ain't none of your business.
Lou, you've got my word. There'll be no shooting. I want to talk to you.
Look, Diamond. I know they want me for the Scarbo killing, and I say, okay, I've done the job. But I'm allergic to electricity, and I don't like cops. You blow this place apart, I say, okay, too. And that's the way I want it. How do you still want to talk?
I want 5 minutes.
Okay, come on, Tom, but keep your hands behind your neck.
Walt, no shooting, huh?
Okay, but I think you're crazy. He kills guys for practice.
I moved out from behind the boxcar and put my hands behind my head. I started down toward the shack, and I could see Spiegel looking at me over the barrel of a .45. One bad move from any of the men stationed around the yards, and I was going to get dead quick. I walked up to the shack and went in.
That's far enough, Diamond. You've got 5 minutes.
It won't take that long, Lou.
Keep your hands where they are.
Oh, I thought you might want a cigarette.
Oh. Yeah, as a matter of fact, I'm all out.
Yeah. Keep the pack.
Just one. I got a date.
Light?
I can make it. 4 minutes, Diamond.
Did you see a girl shoved in front of a car the night you knocked off Scarbo?
Yeah. I called some guy and I told him about it. I read his ad in the personals, but I couldn't do anything about it.
Yeah, because then the law would know you were in the park.
Looks like it don't make much difference now.
The kid who ran over the girl is in on a manslaughter rap. You'll get 5 or 10.
That's tough. You got 3.5 minutes.
Lou, did you get a good look at the man who gave the girl the shove?
Sure, I'd remember him.
Rick!
What do they want?
I'll see.
With your hands up, you'll see.
Sure.
What is it, Walt?
Otis has got Cooper.
Lou, will you do me a favor?
I don't know.
I want you to tell me if a guy they've got up there is the one who pushed the girl.
Sure. But I can't see him from here.
I'll have him brought down.
I hope you ain't up to something. I don't want to see no kid get sent up on a bum rap. But if you get funny, you get holes.
Walt! How about us bring Cooper halfway down to the shack?
He doesn't want to go.
Then drag him. I've only got 2 minutes.
They bringing him?
Yeah, here he comes.
Okay. Out that door.
What are you doing?
I'm doing you a favor. I'm tired of this shack, and I'm walking out with you in front of me.
Okay.
Don't get too far ahead.
Rick, what's Spiegel up to?
I don't know. Hold your fire.
I'm surprised at you. Even if I identified this guy, it wouldn't hold water. I got a bad reputation.
Hey, what's going on?
Take it easy, Otis.
You can't do this to me. What's this all about?
That's the guy, Diamond.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Sure you do. I saw you push that dame in front of the car.
You're crazy.
Now, I don't like that. You got just 10 seconds to admit it.
I won't admit anything.
Then I shoot you.
Hey, you can't.
Shut up, Flatfoot.
Stay out of this, Otis.
I tell you, I won't admit anything.
5 seconds.
Come on, Cooper. I found out all about your prison record. I know Cook sent you up and you wanted to get even. You found those letters Tom wrote to your ex-wife, so you started blackmailing him. And I know you lied when you said you hadn't seen your ex-wife. I found a magazine in her apartment with your address on it.
Time's up.
No. All right, I did it.
You're too late. I'm on schedule.
Oh, you idiot. Why did you shoot him?
What's the difference? I kill people, he kills people. Besides, he wasn't polite. So long, Diamond. You got your favor.
He's making it right.
He'll never make it.
Spiegel. Spiegel, in the name of the law, stop.
For what?
Yeah, they got him.
They sure did.
You know something? He wasn't such a bad guy.
Wasn't he? I guess he's killed a dozen people in his time, but maybe you're right. Maybe he kissed them all goodbye before he pulled the trigger.
Well, I got a right to an opinion.
Yeah, and it scares me a little. You're lucky you didn't try to pull a gun on him. You'd look pretty silly telling everybody what a nice guy he was after he'd shot off the top of your head. Lots of lemon, honey.
What's that you're playing?
I don't know. It says on the sheet music for kazoo and voice.
You idiot. Here, see how this tastes.
Oh, that's swell. But can't you drop a muscle in it or something?
No, that's plenty strong.
Oh.
The last time you complained about my weak drinks, Francis had to carry you home piggyback.
Yeah, remind me to buy him a saddle.
I hear they let the cook boy out of jail this evening.
How the dickens did you know that?
Never mind, I find out things.
You have been snooping.
Well, you won't tell me anything about your cases.
How did you find out?
Uh-uh.
Helen?
No.
You'll be sorry.
Here. You sing this, and I'll tell you how I found out.
Well, I don't know whether I can. Your lips tell me no, but there's yes in your eyes. I've been missing
your kissing. Just because I wasn't wise, I'll stop my scheming and dreaming, 'cause I realize your
Oh, Rick, that's wonderful.
Okay, now, make like a truth serum, or I sing 20 courses of McNamara's band.
Well, I was looking for you, so I called Walt Levinson. He told me all about it. Very elementary, my dear Diamond.
Oh, get her.
Do I look smug?
Close your eyes and let's see.
Now, that's silly. Why do I have to close my eyes?
Close your eyes. Oh, that's better. Mm.
Rick, aren't you nice?
I certainly am. But people always notice my dimples first.
Come here.
Helen. You're looking smug again.
You have just heard Richard Diamond, Private Detective, starring Dick Powell. Helen was played by Virginia Gregg, Lieutenant Levinson by Ed Begley. Also in our cast were Wilms Herbert, Eleanor Audley, William Johnstone, Sam Edwards, David Ellis, and Frank Lovejoy. Music was under the direction of Frank Worth. Richard Diamond is written by Blake Edwards and directed by Richard Sandville. And now, Dick Powell.
Friends, I want to remind you of the wonderful group of programs NBC has on tap for tomorrow afternoon and evening. Shows like Hollywood Calling, Guy Lombardo, Four Star Playhouse, The Ethel Merman Show, and the NBC Symphony. For the best in radio listening tomorrow and always, keep your dial tuned to your favorite NBC station.
Dick Powell soon will be seen in the screen version of the best-selling novel, Mrs. Mike. Now, this is Eddie King inviting you to be with us again at the same time next week when we will again bring you Dick Powell as Richard Diamond, Private Detective. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
Hey, everyone. I thought I would step in here just to let you know that I'm playing this Christmas episode just for fun. I kind of skipped it when I got to it a couple of weeks back, but it's quite funny, the episode is, and I thought maybe you might enjoy it. You know, a little early Christmas listening, and doesn't hurt anyone, I don't believe, didn't hurt me anyway. So anyway, enjoy this Christmas episode of Rocky Fortune, and after this, the sneak peek of The Adventures of Rocky Jordan from Cairo, Egypt.
Now, Frank Sinatra, transcribed as Rocky Fortune. NBC presents Frank Sinatra, starring as that footloose and fancy-free young gentleman, Rocky Fortune.
Did I ever tell you about the time I got mixed up in a plot to murder Santa Claus?
Yeah.
It all started when I answered a Christmas ad for a department store. The ad said, young man of good character is auxiliary store detective and other duties. 2-week employment. So, next day I am an auxiliary shamus for Crockett Baum's department store. Kind of a high-class Fifth Avenue dispensary where for only $50 you can buy your girl a mink toothbrush. And for an extra $5,000 you can get her a coat to match.
This way, Mr.,
Fortune, Rocky Fortune, Mr. Prim.
Yes. This is fifth floor, children's toys. Note, please, Santa's workshop and the enchanted igloo. This will be your post.
What do I do?
Just keep an eye on the merchandise. Quackenbaum's has had a good deal of shoplifting recently.
Yeah, especially in the jewelry department, eh?
We don't like to talk about that, Mr. Fortune.
Mister, it's been on the front page of all the newspapers for a week. $8,000 worth of pearls.
Wow. The thief will be apprehended in good time, have no fear. Well, I must get back to my office.
Just a minute, Mr. Prim.
Yes?
What happens if I see a gonoff?
A what?
A lifter, a thief.
Apprehend the criminal with the merchandise and bring both to my office behind the elevators. The name Lysander Prim is on the door.
Check.
Oh, and one other thing.
Yeah?
At lunch hour, you will relieve Santa Claus.
You mean put on a beard and everything?
Oh, it's just for half an hour. As a matter of fact, you start in exactly 5 minutes.
I'm not exactly built for this.
Neither is our present Santa. They're running thin this year. Just ask Big Elf to help stuff you.
Big Elf?
Santa's helper. The large fellow in the elf suit.
Oh, sure.
Good luck, Mr. Fortune. The honor of Quackenbaum's is in your hands.
At $44.50 a week, Mr. Quackenbaum is getting a bargain. Big Elf, whose name is Marty, weighs about 250. He helps me the Santa suit, and I take over inside the magic igloo while Santa goes out for some chowder. I embarrass a couple of mothers by promising everything the kids ask for, and I'm really living it up, having the time of my life, when a little girl about six comes in all by herself. She's a pretty little thing, too, with blue eyes and freckles. On one leg is a light steel brace. Jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all, and that's what I want for Christmas. Well, hello, honey. You here all alone?
Yes, sir.
Well, what can I do for you?
I have a note for you.
A letter for old Santa, huh? Ho, ho, let's have a look. Dear Santa, you know what we want for Christmas. We better get it or you'll never live to make those Christmas Eve deliveries. Signed, you know who. Well, well, did you write this letter yourself, honey?
No, sir. A man gave it to me.
What did he look like?
Big man with a black mustache. Gave me a nickel, too.
Heavy spender, huh? Honey, what's your name?
Gail. Gail Grayson.
And what would you like Santa to bring you for Christmas, Gail?
I'd like your elf.
You mean Big Bonehead out there?
Oh, no. Not the man in the elf suit. I mean the elf doll. The one with the red silk suit and the green hat.
Oh, well, that's pretty expensive, honey. Maybe your mommy and daddy can't afford it.
I don't have any mommy and daddy.
Oh. Well, you leave your name and address with Santa, and I'll see if we can't arrange for something. It might not be that same doll, but...
That's the one I want.
Yeah, I can see that. Well, look, Gail.
Gail!
I'll
Gail, there you are. I told you to wait outside the man's office.
I wanted to talk to Santa about getting that elf doll.
Honey, I told you that doll costs too much.
Santa says maybe he can arrange something.
Santa's wrong. Look, mister, I've just been seeing a man about trying to get a job in this place so we can afford to eat. I don't have money for expensive dolls.
Well, I'm sorry, miss, I just...
Well, you've no business building up false hopes in children. They put so much faith in this.
Well, if you'd just let me explain, I...
Come around and explain Christmas Eve if you can.
Well, I'd like to, but I don't even know your name.
This is my sister, Laura, and we live at 65 Bleakman Street, 5 flights up Santa...
Gail, for heaven's sake, come along.
You won't forget the doll, will you, Santa? Please, please don't forget, please.
Lose a customer, Jack?
I'm afraid I lost a friend, too.
Cheer up. Maybe you won't live long, then you won't need a friend.
Why don't you just stick to being a big elf, huh, Marty?
Don't be a wise guy, Fortune.
Me? I'm never a smart aleck. By the way, how do they spell elf? O-A-F? After lunch, the real make-believe Santa Claus comes back, and I turn over the suit, beard, and stuffing. I'm glad to get back to being a store detective, but Big Elf is no pleasure to work with. I keep thinking of little Gail. Well, let's face it, I keep thinking of her big sister, who's got eyes like Dresden china and a figure like a Lamarge teapot. I wonder if I'm ever going to see her again, and I don't have to wonder long, because right away things begin to happen.
Help! Don't be Sanger! Catch her!
All right, hold it, hold it.
Oh, let me go.
Take it easy. Well, Laura Grayson.
Who are you?
Santa Claus, remember? My name is Rocky Fortune. I'm also the store dick in this department.
Oh, Mr. Fortune, please. I don't know why I took it.
Well, let's see what we've got here.
It's the
elf doll, the one Gail wanted.
Oh, baby, if you're going to shoplift a doll, they got better ways worked out than just pick it up and run with it.
I had to take it. I couldn't disappoint her. I couldn't.
Yeah, I guess it was partly my fault.
Well, I suppose you'll turn me over to the police now.
Well, hold it, hold it. Lady, this ain't for general publication, but between you and me, I'm the world's worst toy store detective. Too much larceny in my blood. So I'll just turn around for 20 or 30 minutes, and if you're not gone when I turn back, I'm going to put the pinch on you.
You're letting me go?
Please, let's not be vulgar.
Well, thank you, Rocky.
Hey.
What?
You forgot the doll.
But...
I was going to buy it for her anyway. Besides, I get it for only $3 because it's the display model. Now beat it.
Oh, Rocky, I could kiss you.
Go ahead.
I will. Merry Christmas.
And a Happy New Year to you. Wow. The kid slips down the stairway with the elf doll, and I am still wearing a lipstick on my cheek when Mr. Prim boils over. He looks so much like a clothing store dummy, you expect to find a price tag on him. Right behind him is Marty, the big oaf elf.
Mr. Fortune.
Oh, hi.
Where is she?
Where is who? Whom? He.
The dame who stole the doll from Santa's workshop.
Oh, you are a little elf, aren't you?
Mr. Marty here tells me he saw you catch her. Where is she?
Overpowered me. She must be a lady wrestler or something.
Mr. Fortune.
Tell you what, though, Mr. Prim, just to make everything okay, I'll pay for the doll.
What?
No kidding. You see, I know the young lady, and I was going to buy it for her anyway, so I...
Well, this is highly irregular.
Oh, come on, Mr. Prim. Think of how proud Mr. Quackenbaum will be when you tell him you unloaded that shop-worn display model, huh?
Well, it's highly irregular, but go ahead. The sales clerk will make out the proper form.
Well, thanks, Mr. Prim. I'll do that.
Hey, Fortune.
Yeah?
What was the dame's name?
What's it to you?
Just curious, you know.
I know. Stay just as you are. After closing time, I go into the employee's dressing room for a quick wash-up and a change of linen. Place empties out when my pal, the store Santa, flaps in after a hard day at the igloo. He takes off his red suit, and I see he's built like a Japanese wrestler with a nose like Rudolph the Reindeer, only it ain't from drinking melted snow.
Well, good night, everybody.
Good night, Herm. Looks as if the detectives and the Santa Clauses are the late workers in this department, huh?
Yeah, just you and me now.
Just you, Santa. I'm blowing right now.
Just a minute.
Yeah?
That girl who stole the elf doll.
What about her?
Mr. Prim mentioned that you know her. So? I'd like to know her name.
You're the second guy in a half an hour. What is this?
Just what I said, Fortune. What's her name and where does she live?
Look, I know you've been making a list and checking it twice, Uncle, but just what do you want to... Why do you want to know?
I had my eye on that elf doll myself for my kid. I'd like to get it for.
They got brand new ones in stock.
I'm interested in that one. So the name, huh?
Sorry, Uncle.
Fortune, maybe I don't make myself clear. I want that girl's name and address. I want it very bad.
You know you shouldn't use that tone of voice. It don't sound like you got the holiday spirit.
I'm going to use more than a tone of voice if you don't unclaim.
Sorry, Sam.
Okay, Fortune.
Okay, Mom. You want to fight?
I'll try. What's her name?
Why, you punk, I'll bust your...
Gentlemen, gentlemen, please, please, just what is going on here? Well?
What's Samson here tell you?
I was just showing Mr. Fortune here a couple of judo holds that might come in handy next time a young girl overpowers.
This is not a gymnasium, gentlemen. I'll thank you to leave and report back promptly tomorrow morning. Good evening.
I managed to stagger out of my own power and head back to my flat. I figure I'll have some supper and then locate Laura Grayson for another look at that elf doll that everybody wants to get his hands on. Also, for another look at Laura Grayson. Yeah. I stop to line my flu at a local cafeteria and go up to the flat. I walk in like I live there, which I do, and discover I have guests.
Hello, Rocky.
Well, well. Sergeant Hamilton J. Finger. If I knew you were coming, I'd have baked a cake with poison in it.
A cake with a file in it would be more useful where you're going, Rocky, my old pal.
You are referring to the House of Detention?
The same.
Well, sir, if my days as a process server serve me correctly, they make mention of a thing titled due process, which means you don't arrest a guy without you can make some kind of charge, right?
Right.
So?
So we would like to revolve the wheel of our conversation around the axle of your understanding down at the Irish clubhouse.
Concerning?
Concerning a murder.
You said a murder?
Yeah.
Who?
Rocky, this is going to come as a shock to a naive young boy like yourself. But there ain't no Santa Claus.
How come?
How come? Because somebody stuck a knife in him. He's laying on his face over in Quackenbaum's department store. Let's go.
I spent the next few hours as a guest of the city, in the squad room, or sweat box, as it is affectionately remembered by inmates of various steel academies in this state. And mine host, the Sergeant Finger...
All right! Now for the last time. You had an argument with him, right?
He had one with me.
Okay, he shocked you.
Yes.
You shocked him.
Right.
You got interrupted.
Right.
You left.
Right.
Then you come back and stabbed him.
Wrong.
Okay, okay. Let's have your story.
Somebody was after him, Sarge. I got a threatening note that was supposed to go to him.
Where is it?
Here.
This is kid stuff.
You ever hear of a kid threatening Santa Claus? Come on,
okay,
Sarge.
Okay, okay, so it ain't kid stuff. Who sent it and why?
That's what the taxpayers hire you to figure out. Maybe it's got some connection with a jewel robbery.
What do you know about the jewel robbery?
Just what I read in the papers. Somebody snatched $8,000 worth of pearls.
You, maybe?
Don't be ridiculous. I wasn't even working there when it happened.
What makes you think it was an inside job?
The newspapers. They got the opinion from the police. You familiar with this organization?
Don't get funny.
Did it ever occur to you that maybe Santa Claus was in on that jewel job?
As a matter of fact, Rocky, the guy in that Santa Claus suit has a record as long as your arm. Only one thing is wrong.
Yeah?
We can't arrest him for his own murder.
So why pin it on me?
You're available. Also, whoever stabbed him was in on the inside. It happened after the store closed. Also, there's $8,000 worth of pearls floating around someplace and a reward for $1,000 to whoever finds them.
No kidding.
Yeah, you want to claim it? All you have to do is confess you killed a guy, turn in the pearls, collect the reward...
And go to the chair. I'll tell you what, Sarge. You do me a favor and I'll confess to the murder. The jewel robbery and all of the other old crimes you're too stupid to solve.
What's the favor?
Drop dead.
Rocky, someday, pow! Right in the toy department.
Come on, Finger. You know as well as I do I couldn't have done it.
What makes you think so?
That note the lieutenant handed you a few minutes ago. You checked my alibi and I was feeding my face in the cafeteria when he got stabbed. So stop giving me the needle and let me go home.
Fortune, someday!
I know. Pow! Can I go now?
Don't you like it here?
Huh. It's great, but I got a date with a doll. Finger turns me loose and I jockey my way right down to Laura Grayson's apartment in the cheap village flat. It's about 9 p.m. when I get my finger on the doorbell.
Just a moment.
Rocky.
Hi. Can I come in a minute?
Of course.
Where is Gail?
Asleep. I hope so anyway.
Listen, honey, I have to ask you something.
Well?
Have you got the doll?
Of course. Gail's so happy about it, she's ready to fly.
Well, look, I'll have to ask you for it back.
You what?
Well, I'll get another one to replace it, a brand new one, really. But right now, I gotta have that one.
Sure, Rocky. Sure.
It sounds kind of funny, but and I can't explain it now, but you tell a kid I'll get another one, huh?
It isn't necessary, Rocky. Wait a minute, I'll get it for you. Here.
Thanks. I have to get back to the store. I'll call you tomorrow, maybe for dinner, huh?
Uh-huh.
Good night, Laura.
Good night, Rocky.
I knew what she was thinking, so I didn't try to make any excuses. I just took the doll and headed back to my flat to take a look inside. It was as empty as an eggshell in a fox farm. I was just reaching for the phone when it rang. Hello?
Rocky?
Yeah.
But this is Laura. Rocky, something terrible's happened.
What's wrong? What's the matter?
Well, just after you left, a man came. A big man with a black mustache, and he asked for the doll. Said he was from the department store police. I told him you'd taken it back to the store, and he left.
What's so terrible?
Well, he must have awakened Gail, and she overheard us. Anyway, when I went into her room just now, she was gone. Rocky, I don't know what to do.
She heard you say I was taking a doll to the store?
Yes.
Maybe she's on her way over there now to try to get the doll back.
At this hour?
Honey, 6-year-old kids don't know from the wages and hours law. Look, I'll take a run over there just in case she shows up. You notify the police and meet me. I stuff the kid's doll in my overcoat pocket and flag a cab over to Quackenbaum's department store. There's no sign of the kid out front, so I leg it around to the delivery entrance. No sign. I decide to check inside and show my pass to the night watchman at the entrance.
Hold it, mister.
Hiya, Pop. I work here.
Let's see your card.
Here, right here.
Store dick, huh?
That's right, Pop. Now, listen, I'm looking for a little girl about 7 years old. Wears a brace on one foot. You seen her?
What would a kid like that be doing here after hours?
Her mother thinks she got lost in the store.
Oh. Well, I only been on a couple of minutes. I ain't seen her.
I'm going up to check the toy department on 5. You keep an eye out, will you? If she comes along, send her up to 5. I'll be waiting.
Okay. I'll keep watch, Fair.
Thanks. I go up to the toy department. In the darkness, it looks as eerie as a graveyard on Halloween. I figure maybe Gail managed to slip in past the watchman, so I give a yell. Gail! I almost scare myself to death. What's that?
Nobody here but us toys, boss. Get him up, Fortune.
I assume that ain't a lollipop stick in my spine.
That's right, smart boy. Step over here in the light.
So what do I owe the pleasure?
Just a little shopping trip. I'm looking for a doll.
You don't say.
I do. So hand it over.
Help yourself. It's in the coat pocket.
Toss it here.
There.
Now stand still while I have a look inside. Okay, wise guy, where's the stuff?
Stuff?
Don't play dumb. With $8,000 worth of pearls from last week's job inside this doll, where are they?
Search me, pal. Maybe you got the wrong doll.
I got the right doll, Buster.
What makes you so sure?
Santa Claus told me. Before he died.
Looks like you and Santa Claus are running that robbery.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Until he tried to double-cross me.
What happened?
I heisted this stuff and gave it to Santa Claus to hide. He hid it so good I couldn't find it. He wasn't going to tell me where it was until I gave him more than half. Only I changed his mind for him.
Yeah, with a 4-inch blade.
Uh-huh. You should be a store detective. You're real smart.
I take it the stuff was in the doll.
That's right, Rocky. Only it ain't there now. And you had that doll.
Which means?
Unless you unclam, I may have to give you the same treatment I gave Santa Claus.
I'm telling you, the pearls were gone when I got that doll home.
And I'm telling you, if they were gone, it's because you took them.
I don't have them. Sue me.
Rocky, old man, it's Christmas time and goodwill to men and all that, and I hate to knock off two guys in the same day. But if you don't spill them pearls in 5 seconds, I'm going to put lead in your braid. Now, where are they?
I don't know.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Rocky.
What the... Gail, hi, honey.
Come back here, Fortune.
Here's a football for Christmas, boy. I let Big Elf have it in a puss with a football from the toy counter and grab the kid. We duck into the maze of counters and crawl along until we get behind some packing crates. Marty's cursing and looking for us, and he's still got a gun, too.
Rocky, I had to find you. I wanted to...
Shh! Don't let him hear us. Crawl into this packing case.
Rocky, I'm scared.
Do as I say.
Okay, Rocky.
Fortune! It's no use, Fortune. I'm going to find you, and when I do...
Shh!
Come on out, Fortune! Come on out!
Here.
So am I, kid. We gotta do something. Let's see what they got in these boxes. Mighty Mike mechanical police car. Oh, there's a big help. Hey!
What?
Let me have one of those.
Here. What are you gonna do, Rocky?
You'll see.
I'm coming, Fortune.
Look out, Marty!
What's that?
That's two shots. He's got a revolver that holds six. Four to go. Let's see now.
There's something, Rocky. Super rocket ship.
Fine. Let's try this on. Ready? Go.
Fortune, are you crazy? I'm going to get you.
Three and two or five. One more. What's in that box?
It's an atomic blaster, Junior Space Cadet size.
Why not? Let's try it.
I hear you, Fortune. I hear you now.
Try this, Colonel. You missed, Marty. That's pretty bad shooting.
Maybe, punk, but this ain't gonna be.
Those things gotta be loaded before you can shoot them, Marty, remember?
You dirty...
There's something else for Christmas. My gift to Santa's helper was a Louisville slugger right on top of the noggin. And just as he went out, the lights went on. And suddenly the place is crawling with humanity.
Rocky, Gail, are you all right?
We're fine, baby. Well, look who's here, late as usual.
No wisecracks. Is this the missing kid lady?
Yes, officer, thank you.
Who's the stiff?
This is the bum who killed Santa Claus.
Boy, you should have seen Rocky beat him with that bat.
By the way, Gail, where's the stuff that was inside the doll?
You mean the pretty marbles? I thought they came inside the doll, Rocky. It was a sort of surprise.
Some surprise. Do you have them?
I think so. In my pocket someplace. Oh, here they are.
Sergeant? Here you are, sir. Just in case you ain't got all your marbles.
Marbles? Hey, those are the pearls that were heisted last week.
He's got a magnificent mind, this Sergeant Finger, doesn't he? Gail, I'm sorry about the doll, honey, but unless I'm mistaken, you got about $1,000 reward coming for this stuff.
$1,000? Rocky, it's too good to be true. I must be dreaming.
Want me to pinch you?
Couldn't you just kiss me instead?
Why not? Yeah. Merry Christmas.
Happy New Year.
Yeah.
NBC has presented Frank Sinatra as that footloose and fancy-free young gentleman, Rocky Fortune. Others in tonight's cast included Ted Von Eltz, Mary McGovern, Kay Stewart, Frank Gerstle, Jim Nusser, Barney Phillips, Bill Justine. Tonight's script was written by George Lefferts. Andrew C. Love directed. And now, to tell you about next week's adventure, here's Frank Sinatra as Rocky Fortune.
Next week, I managed to get involved in a fixed fight. Some gamblers want me to stay down for the long count, from here to eternity. Tune in and I'll tell you all about it. Till then, I'll see you around.
Visit with Fibber McGee and Molly tonight on the NBC Radio Network.
Hey, everyone, this is OTR Rob welcoming you to The Adventures of Rocky Jordan. This Adventures of Rocky Jordan comes from October 31st, 1948. The episode is entitled The Bartered Bridegroom, and it's the first episode in the second series of Rocky Jordan. The first one was a string of 15-minute episodes, and the backdrop of these Rocky Jordan episodes come from Cairo, Egypt. However, the 15 and 30-minute episodes, which are lost for time except for maybe two 15-minute episodes, were centered in Istanbul. In this new version of Rocky Jordan, the second version, there's no word of how he or why he left Istanbul for Cairo, but it is believed that Rocky Jordan had to leave the United States and he can't return. There's no reason why, but every once in a while, occasionally, someone from his past shows up in Cairo, Egypt. So, anyway, enjoy this episode of Rocky Jordan starring Jack Moyles, who really sounds like Bogart because he really talks like Bogart. This is his natural speaking voice. The only thing different is his delivery, and he delivers his lines like Bogart would have if Bogart had been doing this role. So anyway, I hope that makes sense. But anyway, enjoy this Adventures of Rocky Jordan. And this will be on the fall schedule, just so you know.
Time now for Rocky Jordan.
afternoon in Cairo when she walked into the Cafe Tambourine. She was beautiful, but there was something else. Something so wrong with the picture that I couldn't take my eyes off her. It wasn't the blonde hair piled on top of her head, or the dress that clung to her like a football player covering a fumble, nor even the set expression on her face. But when she stopped in front of me, I knew what it was. She was all woman, but not an inch under 6'4".
Again, we bring you a story of adventure with a man named Rocky Jordan, proprietor of the Cafe Tambourine in Cairo. Cairo, gateway to the ancient East, where modern life unfolds against the backdrop of antiquity. Tonight's story, The Bartered Bridegroom.
We've had a pretty fair assortment of customers in the Tambourine. Almost anything on feet. But when I looked up into that icy-faced 6'4" blonde female, I knew we had our first Amazon.
You're ready, Mr. Jordan?
Ready?
You're wasting time, Jordan.
I didn't catch the name.
Lily Karoff. You're being rude.
The face is familiar. Maybe we met in Istanbul.
No, Jordan.
Alexandria, maybe?
The arrangements are made. You're stalling.
Look, suppose we take it from the top of the page, Miss Karoff.
Naturally, you're interested in the money. This, too, has been taken care of. Now about the ceremony.
Ceremony?
The wedding. Be there in an hour.
Oh, sure, I'll be there in plenty of time. I'm a great believer in weddings. Well, by the way, who's getting married?
I am, Mr. Jordan. To you.
Maybe we'd better go into my office.
That will not be necessary. Timmy Rogers has made all the arrangements.
Timmy Rogers? Now I know we'd better go into the office. She sat across the desk from me and lit a king-sized cigarette. The hand that held the match wore a queen-sized diamond. It sent a reflection against the wall. I didn't like the way the reflection quivered. Her face was under control, but her hands gave her away. She was a nervous bride.
Timmy should have explained these details.
If I know Timmy Rogers, he doesn't bother with details.
That's unfortunate. Nevertheless, in 1 hour, you and I shall be married. You will receive $5,000, is that clear?
Oh, very.
It is not enough money?
Oh, that's not entirely it, Miss Karoff, having never been married before.
You are being rude again. I plan to leave Cairo immediately after the ceremony.
Really? Tell me, Miss Karoff, where are we going on our honeymoon?
Enough, Jordan. I will not be insulted further. You will receive the $5,000 as soon as I have sold my interest in the Club Fichard.
Fichard? Oh, yeah. Now I remember. You and Mike Sloan bought that together recently.
Yes, but I am selling my interest.
Is the matter of business falling off?
No, not business. You see, I'm a white Russian. Certain of my friends have been disappearing lately. I do not wish the same thing to happen to me.
I see.
But this is not what I came to talk about. Now, the wedding...
Look, Lily, I've got news for you. I'm not in the mood for marriage.
Your moods do not interest me, Jordan. You are going to marry me.
Well, I'll admit you're more persuasive with a gun.
You will not refuse me.
Maybe it didn't occur to you, Lil, but you can't marry a dead man. Come on, put the gun away.
There are many other ways to make certain you do not back out. Jordan, be at my club in 1 hour. It means your life.
She moved out of the office as silently as an Arab folding his tent. I followed her out in time to see her climb into a black sedan 2 feet shorter than the Queen Mary. It faded off into the crowded street. I stood there trying to figure out where I could rent a tux cheap when a hand thumped against my back. I turned to see a watered-down version of Tyrone Power, all of 5'5" in his elevated shoes. It was none other than the little fixer himself, Timmy Rogers.
Rocky, old kid, I just saw her leaving. Congratulations, kid.
This makes my day complete.
I'm so happy for you, kid. You'll make a lovely bridegroom.
Slow down, kid. You're drooling on my wedding suit.
What a woman. You're a picker, Jordan, if I ever saw one.
Aren't you forgetting one little item? You picked her, not me.
A mere formality. Greatest girl this side of Minsk.
Well, At least the biggest.
But, Rock, kid, for $2,000, how can you miss?
It's even less interesting for
$2,000. Huh? How's that, Rock?
Lily offered me $5,000.
Well, what do you know? She really must be scared.
Okay, suppose you give me the straight story.
Well, Rock, I'll tell you.
Still listening?
Well, look, why don't you and I go into the bar for a drink, Rock, and I'll tell you all about it.
I followed the little man into the bar. We pulled up in a couple of empty stools by the open front door. Timmy Rogers rubbed his hands, licked his lips, and ordered a double orange blossom.
Orange blossom for a wedding day, huh, Rock? Now, where was I?
You and Lily Karloff, remember?
Yeah. Well, sir, Rock, it's like this. Lil has a few roulette wheels out in the back room of her joint, as you know.
Hmm.
The other night, I ran into as tough a streak of luck as has been seen in Cairo since Happy Harper was picked up for trying to sell some tourists the Sphinx.
How much?
I dropped $5,000, which it just so happens I couldn't cover at the bank.
Mm-hmm. So then came Lily.
Yeah. Lily made me a proposition. She'll forget the $5,000 if I marry her.
Sure.
But it turns out she's looking for an American. She wants a ticket to the USA.
Oh, that pitch, huh?
Well, can't say that I blame her, Rock. Things can get pretty rough around Cairo for the wrong...
Hey, hold it.
Huh?
That guy's been staring at me too long. Standing there in the open doorway was a brown suit full of balloon-shaped Egyptian. His eyes didn't leave my face as he hooked his cane over one arm and smoothed his white gloves with his hand. He tipped the brown bowler on his fat head and waddled toward me.
You are Mr. Rocky Jordan?
Yeah?
I am Mahmoud Pasha. My card.
What's on your mind?
I will not waste time. Mr. Jordan, regarding your coming marriage to Miss Lily Karloff.
Oh, I suppose you're the bride's father.
Indeed, I am not. My affection for Miss Karloff is not paternal. I have come to offer you $10,000 if you do not go through with this wedding.
Ten? It's the best offer I've had all day.
In cash, Mr. Jordan.
If it makes you feel any better, Pasha, you can forget... I hit the floor fast. Over my head, the big mirror behind the bar shattered and rained glass. When the rain stopped, I jumped up and raced for the door. Outside, there was a dent in the usual late afternoon traffic, and down the street shot a black sedan. It was the same car Lily Karloff had stepped into 15 minutes ago. Well, that gave me something to think about as I walked back into my cafe to survey the damage. The man in the brown bowler had vanished. Underneath the table, his broken cocktail glass in his hand, was Timmy Rogers. I helped him to his feet. All right, little man, fit that into your patch story.
I had nothing to do with it, Rocky, so help me.
You'll have to do better than that.
Rock, listen, I didn't know Lily would go that far.
Wasn't Lily. She may be in a hurry for a wedding, but she doesn't want to marry a corpse.
Well, maybe she was only trying to scare you, Rock.
Could be, but I don't like her idea of a wedding invitation. Come on, let's go.
What are you going to do, Rocky?
I'm going to pay my respects to the bride. It started with an Amazon looking for a husband, and then a two-bit gambler with a sense of humor. Then in comes a fat man and a brown bowler who wants to pay for no wedding at all. Rocky Jordan, bartered bridegroom. I shoved Timmy Rogers into a cab and hopped in behind him. I gave the cabbie the address, Club Fashad. 10 minutes later, we pulled up in front of a big streamlined white building. I paid the driver and we got out. The sign on the door said not open until 7 o'clock. Sometimes you can't believe in signs. Coming down the corridor was a slim, tux character named Mike Sloan, manager and co-owner of the Club Fashad. A nasty smile cracked his face. Oh, I'd seen Sloan kicking around Cairo before. I didn't like him. I like him even less now.
Well, Rocky Jordan, Congratulations.
Listen, Sloan, I didn't come here for...
Oh, now, don't bother to explain, Jordan. I understand. You, got our wedding invitation?
Oh, sure. The bride wore a 38.
Lily is sometimes a little impulsive, Jordan. After all, no one was hurt.
But you'll get a bill for that mirror.
We're ready for the wedding. You're wasting time.
It's off, Sloan. Couldn't find the right size wedding cake.
Rogers, what about that? I thought Jordan was all lined up.
I did my best, Mike.
You're not backing out of it now, Jordan. Let's go. The bride's waiting.
Pack her in ice. She'll keep. I'm out of it.
Too easy, Jordan. Not a chance.
Just watch me.
Rocky, listen. You're making a mistake.
You sure are, Jordan.
Oh, I see. It's going to be one of those shotgun affairs, huh?
Well, I wouldn't want to have to kill you. This way, Jordan.
The gun in Mike Sloan's hand didn't move. It buried itself into the middle of my spine. Timmy Rogers wrung his hands and trailed along behind us. Sloan walked me down a thick carpeted corridor, and we turned left into the main office of the Club Fashad. The blinds were drawn. Sloan slammed the door behind us. Coming toward me from the other side of the room was Lily Karoff, with gold earrings swinging like pendants. She was poured into a glaring red dress that revealed an awful lot of the new look.
Well, Jordan, I see you couldn't pass up the money.
Tell your boy Sloan to get the gun out of my back, and I'll show you how fast I can pass it up.
Mike, is everything prepared?
Ready and waiting, Lily. In fact...
Lily, my flower. Lily, what's happening?
It was the balloon-shaped Egyptian in the brown bowler, his cane still draped gracefully over one arm. As he paddled toward us, his mouth fell open. Inside was a small fortune in gold fillings.
What are they doing to you, my delicate Lily?
Ahmed, please leave at once. I do not need your help.
But, my Lily, I'm here to protect you. These men, they are making a fool of you. Do not believe
me. Get out of here, Pasha. This is out of your range.
Please, Lily, my blossom, I beg you to see reason. These men, they only mean to do you harm. The lights! Where are the lights? Help!
Pool of black ink. I dived for the spot where Sloan had stood with the gun. I felt hot air on my neck and turned. The carpet came up and made a fuzzy pillow for my cheek as everything folded into a nightmare of spinning rooms. Somewhere off in the distance, I heard the toll of wedding bells.
Tonight's story continues in just a moment. We're sure you listeners, many of whom have written letters to CBS, are happy to know that Rocky Jordan is back on the air. Yes, Rocky Jordan joins one of the most outstanding mystery lineups in radio. Over your CBS station every Sunday night, you'll hear not only Rocky Jordan, but Sam Spade, Dashiell Hammett's Great Private Eye, and The Whistler, one of the most popular shows on the air. Remember, this half hour, each Sunday evening, will be the time for Rocky Jordan. Now, back to tonight's story, The Bartered Bridegroom.
It was still the office of Lily Karoff. I opened my eyes into a stream of water cascading down my nose. It was coming from a big white pitcher. Holding the pitcher was Sam Sabaya, Captain, Cairo Police.
Well, Jordan. You know, Jordan, on you, this carpet looks very good.
I wish I could say the same thing for my head. What happened, Sam?
Nothing unusual for you, Jordan. Only murder. Look, beside you.
Lily.
Miss Lily Karoff, quite dead.
Like a model for a detective magazine cover.
Only she is not posing, Jordan.
Okay, Sam. Am I booked?
Not yet, Jordan. Not yet.
The dialogue wasn't exactly sparkling on the way to the Cairo jail. Sam confined himself to a few official grunts, and I sat back and watched traffic. In 10 minutes, we pulled up to a sand-colored building, and Sabaya and I got out. I followed Sam to a small back room. He closed the door and pulled up a couple of chairs.
Coffee, Jordan?
Oh, I need more than coffee, Sam.
But we serve only coffee here.
Sorry.
Now, Please, tell me everything.
Beginning when?
The police received an anonymous phone call to come to the Club Fachad at once. I arrived to find the body of Lily Karloff shot to death. The gun that apparently killed her was in your hand.
Oh, you tell it much better, Sam. Go ahead, go ahead.
Never mind, Jordan. I'm waiting for your story.
All right, I'll make it brief. Lily came by my office this afternoon with the idea of marrying me. She said something about wanting to leave the country.
Leave the country?
Yes, she's a white Russian, Sam.
Mm-hmm.
Said certain friends of hers had been disappearing lately. Hey, underground stuff, maybe, huh?
Yeah, underground, of course. Very likely.
Well, that's what the lady said, Sam.
The lady deceived you, Jordan. I will show you. Now, here we are. A complete report on any and all underground activities in Cairo in the past year. Look, not one case of unexplained disappearance, as you call it.
Well, Sam, a good job wouldn't leave a case history for the police.
Jordan, I'm afraid you have been taken in by this fantastic story.
Live and learn. Well, anyway, after Lily, my next caller was Timmy Rogers. He's a small-time gambler. He gave Lily the idea about marrying me.
Mm-hmm. Go on.
Then a short, fat man and a brown bowler shows up. Lily's stage door Johnny. He tries to buy me out of the marriage.
Jordan, I'm trying very hard to believe you.
So then Mike Sloan, one of Lily's boys, shot up my place just so I wouldn't forget. It's my wedding day. All right, I went to Lily's to set everybody straight, and that's where you found me.
Jordan, what about this man in the brown bowler?
His name is Ahmed Pasha. We got anything on him, Sam?
Certainly, Jordan. Ahmed Pasha happens to be one of the richest men in Cairo.
Yeah, but...
And the most respected. He is a business broker of high reputation. He buys and sells business enterprises.
Like nightclubs?
And why not? Jordan, you are beginning to waste my time. It is not likely that you killed Lily and then struck yourself on the head. Therefore, I shall release you with the usual warning. Jordan, do not...
Oh, not again, Sam. I've heard that speech before. No, I'm not leaving Cairo. I like it here. I strolled out of Sam's office and onto the busy street. The neon signs were beginning to light up, which reminded me that the night crowd would be moving into the Cafe Tambourine. But there was one little matter that came before business. Murder. I was only a block away from the station when a small character stepped out of a darkened doorway.
Well, 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 Rock, old kid, I've been looking all over for you.
Why don't you try the other side of town?
Listen, Rock, I didn't know it would turn out this way. I just read the extra about Lily. Look, Rock, you gotta believe me. I ran out of Lily's place the minute the lights went out. I didn't know about it till later.
Sam Sabaya might like to hear that story.
Look, Rock, I saw something in that room. You know who turned out those lights? Sloan did it. I saw him.
It's not news, little man. But Mike Sloan has some answers, and that's the man I'm going to see.
But, Rock, he wouldn't be hanging around the facade. Maybe we ought to go back to your place and get a drink first, huh?
Hey, maybe you're right for once in your life. You give me an idea. Timmy Rogers and I headed back to the Cafe Tambourine. At every corner, Timmy looked four ways before crossing the street. It was exactly 7:30 when we walked in the front door. I worked my way through the crowded tables toward my office. Timmy Rogers hung on my coattail like a scared kid at a bargain counter. I opened the door. Just as the books were beginning to balance, I knew I had to throw them all out of the window. Sitting behind my desk was the man I was looking for, Mike Sloan. He was dead. Three holes neatly punctured the starched white shirt front of his tuxedo.
Rocky, is he dead?
Shut the door.
Rock, what's that?
It's a calling card. Sloan had it crumpled in his hand.
Gee, Rock, let me see.
Yeah, not so fast. Here.
What? There's nothing on it. Just a dirty orange spot.
Try turning it over, Timmy. Makes more sense that way.
Rock, it says Ahmed Pasha.
You've guessed it. It's his calling card.
Then that means Ahmed Pasha left it there?
Well, not likely. Maybe Sloan was trying to tell us something.
You're right, Rocky. Sure. Ahmed Pasha was in love with Lily and she wouldn't have him. So when he couldn't stop the wedding, he killed her.
And Sloan saw him do it. It fits that way.
Yeah, maybe it does, Rocky. What are you going to do now?
Find Ahmed Pasha.
Well, I don't know, Rocky. The Pasha didn't strike me as that kind of a guy. Maybe we're jumping to conclusions, Rocky, huh?
Maybe not.
Well, I don't know. That isn't much proof. Ahmed Pasha just doesn't look like the kind of person who would commit murder. Are you going to call Sabaya?
Yeah, later. There's one other call I'm going to make first.
Where's that, Rock?
The card says office number 17 Kadru Street.
Well, pretty late for calling at Pasha's office, isn't it, Rock?
Oh, just a hunch, that's all. Coming with me?
Yeah, well, okay, Rocky, I guess so.
We ducked out the alley door. Down the street, we hailed a taxi and gave him the Pasha's address. As we weaved through the night traffic, wheels in my head ticked along with a cab meter. Everything added up like a traveling salesman's expense account. It fit now. I wouldn't be throwing any more books out of the window. There was a light in the office front as the cab pulled over to the curb. I'm looking for Ahmed Pasha. Is he here?
It's rather late. No, he's not in.
Hey, mind if we step inside?
Well, very well. You are also from the police?
Rocky, maybe we better get out.
No, not exactly, sweetheart. Ahmed Pasha left a calling card at my place. I'm returning the call.
Then you are not the police?
No. When were the police here?
A while ago. I don't remember. Please, Ahmed Pasha is not here. I cannot help you. I have not seen him all afternoon.
Oh, just calm down. We'll make this short.
Please don't ask me any more questions. It is time to close the office. I must go home.
One thing more. Any idea where we could find him?
Perhaps at his hotel. That is all I know.
Oh, yeah, the partner.
No. The Hotel Shepherd, room 614.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, sure, that's it. Sorry to bother you. I watched the girl bolt the door behind us and pull the curtains. So Sam Sabaya had paid his respects to the Pasha after all. Didn't look like his luck was any better than mine. Timmy Rogers had something in his mind.
It's this way, Rock. The Pasha shows up in your cafe and I get shot at. Then he comes to the wedding and Lily gets killed. You know, Rock, I don't think I'm in a hurry to meet that Pasha again.
See what you mean.
Look, Rock, why not let Sabaya handle it? If you go up there to Ahmed Pasha's hotel, you don't know what might happen.
Timmy, I think you got something there. Maybe it would be a nice idea to have Sabaya along.
Sure thing, Rock. That's playing it smart.
Oh, come on, we're wasting time.
And not we, Rocky. If Sabaya is checking on Ahmed Pasha, I'm next. I don't want any part of that police station. The last time I dropped in to see Sabaya, I stayed 30 days.
All right, see you around, Timmy.
Yeah, sure, Rock. See you around.
I found the nearest phone booth and dialed police headquarters. Sabaya was gone for the night. My next stop was the Cafe Tambourine. Nothing had turned up. Mike Sloan was still sitting behind the locked door to my office, and I left him there. That made it complete. There was only one item left on my list. Hotel Shepherd, room 614. The lobby of the Shepherd was teeming with the tourist trade. I strolled over to the main desk and waited for a pith-helmeted Englishman to collect his mail. Then I moved in.
Rocky Jordan, I say, it's good to see you again. Where you been?
Oh, usual places, Archie.
Ah, what's on your mind, Rocky?
Archie, you got a small favor.
Oh, Rocky, the last favor you asked of me almost cost me my position here.
Oh, sorry to hear it. This one's going to be easy.
Oh, yes? What is it?
I want the key to room 614.
Really? Oh, now, Rocky. There you go again.
Oh, this is important, Archie.
Oh, I can't do it, Rocky. Sorry, I'd really be discharged doing a trick like that. Besides, that's Ahmed Pasha's room. Don't you know that? Well, he's a permanent guest.
Look,
here.
Look, Archie, I said it was important.
Oh, well, I'd like to, Rocky, but you know...
Thanks, Archie. I knew you'd help me out. Archie's a real friend. He made like he didn't even know I'd slipped him the 10 spot when he handed me the key. Being in Shepherd's was like old home week. When the little numbers on the door said 614, I stopped. This was the end of the line. I put the key in the lock. I gave the doorknob a quick turn, kicked the door open, and dived for the floor inside. When the shooting stopped, I reached back with my foot and kicked the door closed. In the thick darkness, I started crawling for the spot the shots had come from. I figured he wouldn't move, but I was wrong. I met him halfway. He didn't have time to shoot again. The lights came on, and in the doorway stood Ahmed Pasha, all cane and white gloves, the brown bowler resting neatly on his round head.
What is the meaning of this?
Right on time for the shooting. Maybe you'd like to meet the man who murdered Lily Karoff. Take a look.
Why?
That's right. The little fixer himself, Timmy Rogers.
Rocky Jordan will be back in just a moment. Now a note for you listeners. Remember, Rocky Jordan has joined one of the most outstanding mystery lineups in radio. Over your CBS station every Sunday night, you'll hear not only Rocky Jordan, but Sam Spade, Dashiell Hammett's Great Private Eye, and The Whistler, one of the most popular shows on the air. Remember this same time each Sunday night for Rocky Jordan. Now for the ending of tonight's story.
It was after midnight before Sam Sabaya and I could settle down back in my office at the Cafe Tambourine. They had taken Sloan's body away, and as usual, Sam wanted details.
Now, Jordan, about the Pasha's calling card.
I found Sloan dead with the card in his hand. It was Ahmed Pasha's, all right, but on the back there was an orange spot. The Pasha's too neat a guy to be passing out soiled calling cards. Besides, the color of the spot struck me. Where would you pick up an orange spot?
I haven't the slightest idea.
That's because you don't drink, Sam. Ever hear of a cocktail called an orange blossom? They're real fancy things, made with orange sherbet and gin.
What has this orange blossom to do with the calling card?
Timmy Rogers was drinking one this afternoon when my bar got shut up. He must have picked up Posh's card off the bar after the shooting. What he didn't notice was that a little of his own drink had spilled on it.
Then he deliberately left the card in Mike Sloan's hand after killing him.
Sure. Timmy had it all set for Ahmed Pasha. Till I made him think Pasha knew something. That's when he got scared. He waited for Pasha in his hotel room, and when I came in, well, you know the rest. He fired at a swinging door.
So Timmy killed Lily, and then Mike, because Mike had seen him do it.
Now, the whole scheme was simple, Sam. It was Timmy's idea to set up the phony White Russian scare. That was to get Lily out of town so he and Mike could take over a money-making nightclub. They were going to buy her out for almost nothing. And at the same time, Timmy could square the $5,000 he owed the club.
A good scheme it was, too, Jordan. Except that Timmy Rogers lost his head and killed Lily when Ahmed Pasha threatened to expose them. Ahmed Pasha must have loved Lily very much, Jordan.
Lily, his little flower,
Do not make fun of his love, Jordan. Love is a serious business.
Guess I wouldn't know, Sam. I guess I wouldn't know.
Rocky Jordan is presented from Columbia Square in Hollywood and stars Jack Moyles in the title role. Tonight's story was written by Gomer Kuhl and William Frug, produced and directed by Cliff Howell, with original music by Milton Charles. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System. Adventures of The Saint, starring Vincent Price, The Saint, based on characters created by Leslie Charteris and known to millions from books, magazines, and motion pictures, the Robin Hood of modern crime now comes to radio, starring Hollywood's brilliant and talented actor, Vincent Price, as The Saint.
That the language of music is a truly universal one, Mr. Templar, is in the people gathered here. They run the gamut from saints to sinners. Would you not agree?
I would indeed, Mr. Opdahl. Won't you join me?
Oh, I accept with pleasure.
Fine.
Then you know me, Mr. Templar.
Well, if you promise to keep the deep, dark secret, I'll confess that I have bought tickets to Carnegie Hall from time to time. Piano concerts mostly, and those performed by Lawrence Opdahl primarily.
That is a pleasing compliment, Mr. Templar.
Well, it's understandable how I'd recognize a famous concert pianist like Lawrence Opdahl.
Thank you.
But the reverse is rather puzzling.
If you will keep the deep, dark secret, I shall confess. You were pointed out to me by a newspaper reporter seated at my table.
Which explains half the compliment. But why did you come to my table?
Why did you come here to this nightclub called the Birdcage, Mr. Templar?
Well, I could say because it reminds one of the black hole of Calcutta, but the real reason was to hear the piano music of Johnny Crawford.
Yes, precisely, as did I.
A Dixieland hepcat receiving recognition from a Carnegie Hall maestro?
Johnny Crawford was once my pupil, Mr. Templar.
Oh.
He had a magnificent technical grasp of classical music, but no artistic soul. He was a great disappointment to me. Nevertheless, I do not wish to see Johnny Crawford dead. That is why I have come to you.
Well, now that's a rather macabre touch to an otherwise light-hearted evening.
Murder is always macabre, Mr. Templar.
So it's to be death by violence, then.
It is, and I shall tell you a great deal more about it at my home tomorrow morning, Mr. Templar. 637 Reseda Drive. I'm certain that you will be kind enough to be there.
That's the kind of certainty that causes horse players to go broke, Mr. Opdahl.
Then let us say I'm playing a long shot. And I'm betting that among the saints and sinners present here, you are numbered among the former.
One question.
Yes?
Could you give me any idea as to why someone should desire to remove the aforesaid Johnny Crawford from the ranks of the living?
Oh, I can do better than that, Mr. Templar. I can give you the name of the person who will be responsible.
Oh, and that person?
A musical composer who has been dead for over 100 years. Ludwig van Beethoven.
Yes?
Well.
Should I say thank you or slap your face?
What do you think?
The slaps have it. What could I do for you?
You must be kidding.
And if you're here to see Mr. Opdahl, you must be Simon Templar.
Guilty. And you?
Mickey Clark, Mr. Opdahl's secretary.
Mickey Clark, well.
Won't you lope in, Mr. Templar?
Oh, thanks. I could hardly refuse such an enthusiastic invitation. Well, Rachmaninoff's Prelude in C sharp. Is that the maestro playing?
It's not Jimmy Durante.
Oh.
The music room's at the far end of the foyer. Mr. Opdahl's expecting you. Come with me.
Oh, thanks. I'll take advantage.
Oh, no. Those are shots.
Identification acknowledged. Come on, let's go.
What's happened in there?
I suggest you stay behind me and let me find out first.
Mr. Templar.
Yes. Oh, that was no prelude in C sharp being played in here, Mickey. It was a prelude to murder.
To murder?
Where do those French doors lead to?
Why, to the terrace. Why?
See if it isn't too late to help Mr. Opdahl while I...
Oh, no!
Well, it's nasty weather out anyway.
But aren't you going after him?
My halo wouldn't look too well on top of a shroud. Where's the nearest telephone?
Telephone?
Yeah, I know this comes as a great surprise, Mickey, but the police are rather fussy about these things.
Oh, yes, of course. The telephone's right up... He's not dead. He's trying to play something. He's trying to...
Take it easy, Mickey. Take it easy. Abdul. Abdul, it's Simon Templar. Who shot you? Do you know who shot you?
He can't talk, but he's trying to play. He's trying...
Abdul. Abdul, can you hear me? It's Templar. Who shot you, man? Who shot...
Mr. Templar. Is it...
He is, Mickey. This time it's for sure.
Oh. What was he trying to say as he died? Tell us the name of the murderer.
One thing I've learned in this drab, weary life, my dear, is never to second-guess a dead man. Hey, what's this caught under the music rack?
It looks like a couple of torn bits of paper.
You thereby win your A for acumen, Mickey.
Oh, I recognize that top one, Mr. Templar. It's a personal notepaper used by Mr. Opdahl. Huh.
Who is Paul?
Paul?
Mm.
Paul DeGage. He's Mr. Opdahl's concert manager. Why?
The name Paul is the only written word left on the page. Look, we might have a slightly better lead on this second bit of parchment.
Well, it's part of a music manuscript.
Yeah, and an old one, too, judging by the condition of the paper and the signature attached thereto. Ludwig van Beethoven.
Beethoven?
Mm-hmm, the popular tunesmith who left this mortal coil some 100 years ago. Do you think it's possible that the old boy came back? You sure you want to come along with me on this little jaunt, Mickey?
Lawrence Updahl was a swell boss and a wonderful guy. If there's anything I can do to help you get the man who killed him, I'm going to do it.
And all the time I thought it was my personality that intrigued you. Well, let's hope I'm not as disappointed by Mr. Opdahl's concert manager, Paul DeGage.
I still can't believe it, Mr. Templar. Lawrence Opdahl dead. Murdered? Why would anyone want to murder Lawrence Opdahl?
That was going to be my question, Mr. DeGage. You don't suppose it was because he was going to tell me who wanted to murder Johnny Crawford, do you?
Johnny Crawford?
Yeah.
Who is he?
No, no. You obviously don't suppose. Any other suggestions?
I'm sorry, Mr. Templar, but I'm so stunned by this news. Lawrence was going to play for me this very evening, and I wasn't
aware that Mr. Opdahl had a concert date for this evening, Mr. DeGage.
It wasn't a concert engagement, Miss Clark. By a stroke of good fortune, I'd come into possession of an original musical manuscript of Beethoven's, Piano Sonata, and Lawrence was...
Did you say Beethoven?
Yes. It's an original that's never been published. It was known to exist, but was lost en route to the publishers in 1824, and never turned up again until just recently.
Why, it must be worth a fortune, Mr. DeGage.
Well, it is quite valuable, yes. I'm going to offer it for sale to a small group of collectors in Coronado this evening. Lawrence had agreed to play it for me, but
you
now...
wouldn't happen to have this manuscript here, would you?
Oh, yes. Yes, it's in my safe.
Do you mind if we take a look at it?
Why, of course not. I'll have it for you in just a moment.
Thank you.
It's a remarkable document. Seems to be no question as to its authenticity.
And that always helps. How did you happen to get hold of it?
A refugee from Vienna brought it to this country some years ago. Just discovered it among some old family possessions he'd brought along with him. Doesn't know how it got there. I'm selling it for him. There you are. Please handle it carefully, Mr. Templar. It's quite old and fragile. Would probably tear quite easily.
That wouldn't be an apology for the fact that it's torn right now, would it?
Torn? Why, I'm not certain I understand.
The missing signature should supply the missing meaning.
Missing signature? You mean that... Oh, good heavens. Well, you really had me worried for a moment, Mr. Templar. But as you can see, this manuscript is in perfect condition.
There's the original signature. Ludwig van Beethoven.
He's right, Simon. What about that torn piece of...
Exactly what I was going to say, Mickey. Thanks for your trouble, Mr. DeGage. Sorry I bothered you.
It's not a question of bothering me, Mr. Templar. I'm merely puzzled. I don't understand what a Beethoven manuscript might have to do with the murder of Lauritz Apthol.
That's the reason I'm sorry I bothered you, Mr. DeGage. Now, neither have I.
Police are gone. I don't think I could have returned here if Mr. Apthol was still...
I'm not too happy about homicidal surroundings myself, Mickey.
Well, then why come back at all?
I find myself with an ungovernable impulse to indulge in musical composition, and I... More of that later, Mickey. It would appear we have an unexpected eavesdropper amongst us.
An unexpected... Oh!
Oh, don't stop now, Sam.
If you don't mind, I'd just as soon. The farther away I am from lethal weapons, the better I like it.
That is a gun in his hand, isn't it, Simon?
Genus automatic pistol, species caliber 45.
That's very scientific, Jim. So you better hand over that paper.
Paper?
Don't play coy, Jim. The paper you took from Apthol's music room.
Oh, that. Oh, I'm sorry, but I'm saving autographs. Never had one of Beethoven's before, either.
Yeah, I bet you never had your tummy blasted by a 45 slug before, either.
That's true, true. So I think I'd better take that gun.
Oh, no, you don't,
better
Chum.
Give it to me.
All right, Chum, I will.
Simon! Oh, you killed
shut
him.
Shut up, shut up.
He's dead. You killed him. You killed him.
You said to shut up, didn't I? I'll stand back while I look at that paper.
Oh.
She'll be somewhere in his... Yeah. Yeah, inside pocket, huh? Thanks, Chum.
Pretty brave with a gun, aren't you?
Yeah. Better retire in the music business, sister. From where I sit, it don't look too healthy. So long, baby.
Simon, please answer me. Are you all right, Simon? Answer me, please.
I must speak to my barber about this.
Simon.
And somehow the padding and massage I get after a shave doesn't give me anything like the sensation I'm getting now.
Simon, you're all right. You...
Well, I will be when the boys operating the trip hammers on my skull knock off at 5 o'clock.
Why didn't you let me know? Why did you lie there playing possum like that?
I doubt that a possum would appreciate the lovely picture you made as you bent over me, but as for me, well, I was in no hurry to wake up. What happened to Chum?
He departed with your prize autograph after creasing your skull with a bullet and threatening me with the same.
A lovable soul, isn't he? Mm. My only consolation is that his aim is far worse than even his intentions.
Simon, for Pete's sake, come across. So far, I don't understand a thing.
Which puts us both in the same boat. And speaking of boats, come along, Mickey. We've got an appointment with one.
Oh, how nice. Any particular kind?
Oh, yeah, very particular kind. A ferry boat that's going to take us across the Bay to Coronado.
Ferry boat is like a ghost ship.
Oh, now don't tell me that a little fog is getting you down, Mickey.
Little fog. It's so thick we can't even see the rail from here. Why are you so insistent on getting over to Coronado tonight?
Paul DeGage is selling a Beethoven manuscript to a bunch of collectors there, remember? One of my more famous hunches tells me that among those present should be a guy for whom capital punishment was invented.
I hope it's better than the two hunches you had on that torn manuscript.
It has to be.
What is it, Simon?
A piano in the lounge. Do you hear it?
Yes. Rather good, too.
It should be. The pianist is a former pupil of Lauritz Apthol's, now holding forth at a dingy dive called the Birdcage.
The Birdcage? Simon! You mean Johnny Crawford?
And if it isn't, he should sue for plagiarism. That's his personal theme song.
Johnny Crawford aboard this ferry boat. Now, why would he be going to Coronado?
That's a good question, Mickey. Suppose we ask Johnny for the answer, huh? Door to the lounge should be somewhere over here.
Maybe it is, but it looks like you'll have to navigate by radar to find it.
Somebody's coming out on deck now. All we have to do is find
that
door.
Calm down. Everything's going to be okay.
I hope you're right, Jensen. I've got the creeps for fair.
Never mind the creeps.
Quiet,
I know
I'm right. Listen to those
voices. Don't get excited. We got the signature, didn't we? Who's going to know the difference now?
I know it, Jensen. Maybe someone else does, too.
Oh, forget it, Johnny, will you? I'll meet you at the birdcage when it's all over.
The birdcage. Johnny Crawford at the birdcage.
What are you kicking about? It's a living, isn't it?
Oh, sure.
Pretty soon we'll all be in a heavy sugar. Now, just you wait.
Well, you better be right on.
They're gone, Simon. Hidden in the fog. Who were they?
Didn't you recognize one of the voices?
Hi.
It was the friendly one who tried to part my hair with a .45.
What was it all about?
That's the second question I have to ask Crawford. You wait here, Mickey. I'll be right back.
Simon, you can't. Jensen's got a gun.
Oh, don't worry about that. I'll keep my fingers crossed. I'll be seeing you.
Simon, I can't stay here alone. I'm allergic to fog. Oh, you crazy fool. I can't even see you.
Oh.
Simon. Simon, what was that? What happened? Simon! Oh, no. Simon! Help! Help me!
Man overboard! Man overboard! Man overboard! Man overboard!
There you are, mister. We got him. Grab the
bottle! I have it,
sailor. Somebody help
me. Many thanks.
All right, come out of my head. Get over here.
Simon. Simon, are you all right?
Oh, frankly, no. I'm...
I was standing right there.
Damp, and my head aches. I've swallowed liberal quantities of seawater, which I found much too salty, and I have a terrific yen to play the piano.
To play the... Oh, no, not again.
Mickey, my dear, any psychiatrist will warn you of the dangers of inhibiting a creative urge. I think I'd better get into that lounge and get this one out of my system. Children make a grave mistake, Mickey, by not paying attention to music lessons. Now, if I'd only listened to Professor Heinrich Wurzel,
If you'd only listened to me, Jensen or Crawford, or whoever it was, wouldn't have hit you on the head. And you'd be rational now, rather than non-compos mentis.
Oh, you shouldn't speak so harshly of whoever it was, Mickey. When he tossed me into the briny, for some reason I thought of music, piano music. And I think I've got something. If I could only find the right combination...
Personally, I think you should try to find that psychiatrist you mentioned earlier. More attention to your noodle and less to noodling might result in getting...
Mickey, you've jumped to a big, fat, and incorrect conclusion. Listen to this.
It's hardly what I'd call a musical tour de force.
Mickey, you're not listening. I'll give you one more chance. There, sound familiar to you?
Not in the least. But then I didn't take lessons from Professor Heinrich Wurzel, which might account for my... Wait a minute. That phrase. Isn't that what Lawrence Opdahl played just before he died?
You see, you should have studied under Professor Wurzel.
Oh.
He would have given you 100 in musical identification.
Now you're not trying to tell me that little musical phrase means something, Simon.
Well, let's see now. We'll be in Coronado at 6.
Yeah.
That should give me about 2 hours to prove its meaning to you.
Sounds like a rather complicated procedure.
Oh, the procedure itself will be simple, but first I have to clutter it up with a call to Lieutenant Flanagan and a little visit to the public library.
I can only say, Simon, that I trust the past hour and a half in that library was more entertaining for you than it was for me.
Oh, it was, Mickey, it was. You'd be surprised at the amount of interesting information one can garner in a library.
Maybe I wouldn't be so surprised if you'd share some of it with me.
Well, I learned the very interesting tidbit that Ludwig van Beethoven lived from 1770 to 1827.
Fascinating.
Mm-hmm. That he wrote 9 symphonies.
Amazing.
That he had a sketchbook containing a mass in C sharp, a piano sonata, a fugue on Bach, and...
Oh, Simon, please. If that's all you can tell me about an hour and a half of wasted time...
Well,
you can...
not quite. I could mention the fact that one of the more incorrect books on Beethoven was written by a John Masefield Crawford.
What difference does it make who wrote the... John Masefield Crawford?
Mm-hmm.
Could that be our Johnny Crawford, by any chance?
Could be.
An authority on Beethoven?
A poor one, but an authority.
So what?
So this. We're going to make a bid on a Beethoven manuscript, and don't be too surprised if we win it. And a murderer as well.
Paul DeGage up on the roster. Yeah. Looks as though the bidding's about to begin.
You couldn't ask for better timing from a metronome.
All right, gentlemen. Quiet, please. Quiet. This was to be a very happy occasion, gentlemen, as you all know. For we were to present here tonight an original, authentic, and hitherto unknown manuscript of a piano sonata by Beethoven. In honor of the occasion, I prevailed upon my dear friend, Lawrence Uptel, to be the first to play the sonata. Unfortunately, as most of you now know, he has met with a tragic end. In deference to Lawrence's memory, I have not sought another pianist to substitute for him. I am certain you all share my feelings. And so...
I'd be very happy to play the sonata for you, Mr. DeGage.
Simon, are you crazy?
I'm not certain I quite understand the meaning of this interruption, Mr. Temple.
Oh, I wouldn't let that bother me, Mr. DeGage. Now, as soon as I reach that piano... Huh? There.
Well, really, Mr. Templar, I...
Oh, it's quite simple, Mr. DeGage. I'm going to substitute for Lawrence Uptel.
You? Why, I didn't know that you were a pianist, Mr. Templar.
Oh, sure. One of the best. Listen to this.
Mr. Templar, there can only be 2 explanations for this outrageous action on your part. You're either drunk or mad. I shall have to ask you to leave this hall at once.
Now, surely, Mr. DeGage, you wouldn't want me to leave so soon, not before I've told these gentlemen that Beethoven never wrote the music on that manuscript you have for sale.
Beethoven never wrote
that manuscript is a fake. No such piano sonata was ever written by Beethoven or lost on its way to the publishers.
This is preposterous. A record of that sonata is in Beethoven's own sketchbook.
Oh, I'll admit that a piano sonata is noted in the sketchbook, yes. But if the person who forged this manuscript had looked far enough, he'd have learned that the original was written for 4 hands as a duet, not for 2.
Well, I can't believe it.
This manuscript is a forgery, written by a former so-called expert named Johnny Crawford.
What? If this is so, if it's... Do you have any proof, Mr. Templar?
Lawrence Opdahl's death is proof enough. He discovered the forgery, but then he made a grave mistake. He thought Crawford's life would be in danger to prevent the knowledge from coming out. But it was his own life that was taken.
Then it was Crawford who killed him?
Opdahl told me who killed him, Mr. DeGage.
Opdahl?
He couldn't talk, but he could play. And he played 6 notes. These notes. Those notes spell the name of the murderer, a name that will be verified by his accomplices when they're picked up by the police. And for the edification of those who never studied under Professor Heinrich Wurzel, the notes
You'll never hang this on me, Templar.
Look out, Simon, he's got a gun.
Well, then I'd better...
Leave him. I'll kill you for this, Templar. I'll kill you.
Well, that's such a revolting thought to gain. I'd better not risk the possibility. Now, what was that you were saying, Mr. DeGage?
Simon, he can't say anything. He's out cold.
Come to think of it, so he is. And look at the time, just 8:00. I told you you'd have your answer in 2 hours, didn't I?
The whole idea was DeGage's from the start, and Johnny Crawford and Jensen were working for him.
Mickey, why don't you stop your intellect from taking over for your emotions?
Simon, then Crawford must have forged the manuscript. He was a good enough pianist and a semi-authority on Beethoven to do it. But how did Mr. Opdahl come into it?
You know, they say that boat rides are wonderful therapy in cases of inhibited romance.
Of course. Crawford was his pupil. I'll bet he got cold feet and showed Mr. Opdahl a copy of the manuscript. And Mr. DeGage got wind of it, killed Mr. Opdahl, and made off with the copy. Only part of it was torn off of the music rack.
Oh, and this blessed fog. It makes everything so warm and cozy.
It must have been the idea of a second manuscript that tipped you off, huh? Particularly when Jensen was so anxious to get the torn signature.
I wonder if you'd still feel like slapping my face.
And, of course, I finally got what you meant about those six notes Mr. Opdahl played. They were DeGage, spelling DeGage.
Yeah. Mickey, when are you going to stop being logical?
Oh, Simon. Right now.
You have been listening to another adventure of The Saint, the Robin Hood of modern crime. And now, here is our star, Vincent Price.
Ladies and gentlemen, one of the four horsemen is still riding across Europe, scarring the bodies and spirits of millions with brutal hooves. His name is Hunger, and his victims are legion. Their cries for help are sounding right outside our door. Despite increased supplies of certain foods and improved crop conditions, Europe's need for more food is urgent and immediate. Americans can help now by sending food packages to Europe's hungry ones through the auspices of CARE, a nonprofit humanitarian organization. CARE, spelled C-A-R-E, stands for Cooperative for American Remittances to Europe. It is composed of the country's 26 top welfare agencies, all operating to drive the specter of hunger from Europe. You can aid in this work by sending a $10 remittance to CARE, New York. A 21.5-pound food package will then be sent to any designated person in 15 countries. Or if you wish, CARE will select a recipient. Smaller food packages are available for lesser amounts. The address again is CARE, New York. Remember, they still need CARE. This is Vincent Price inviting you to join us again next week at this same time for another exciting adventure of The Saint. Good night.
Tonight's script of The Saint was written by Sidney Marshall. Our cast included Alice Frost, Fritz Feld, Ted Osborne, Tony Barrett, and George Meese. The music was composed and conducted by Von Dexter. The Saint, based on characters created by Leslie Charteris, is a James L. Safier production and is directed by Helen Mack. Vincent Price is soon to be seen in the Universal International picture Curtain Call at Cactus Creek. All you Saint fans will be glad to know that the Saint comic books are on sale at all newsstands. Your announcer, Doug Gourlay. Monday night brings you two great adventure mystery programs side by side on most NBC stations. You'll hear Nightbeat and then Top Secret. Lovely Alona Massey stars in Top Secret, the story of espionage during the last war. Be sure to tune here tomorrow night for Nightbeat and Top Secret. Next, Sam Spade, then Summer Symphony on NBC.
Hey everyone, I just thought I would step in here to give my thanks to everyone who's been listening to these detective podcasts. And I want to thank everyone who has tuned in to these detective shows. I had no idea how popular they were going to be. In fact, so popular that there's 40,000 plus listeners for each block of detective shows that I've done. And I want to thank everyone for making it possible, for listening, for tuning in and enjoying these detective shows, and I thank you from the bottom of my heart.
Ladies and gentlemen, the ringing of that phone bell means mystery, adventure.
Nero Wolfe's office, Archie Goodwin speaking. Europe. And you've lost your... Oh.
Archie, the answer is no.
Hold on a second. The answer to what is no, Mr. Wolfe?
I should not attempt to find a blonde for anyone.
You've got the man on the phone a little wrong, Mr. Wolfe. He's not looking for a blonde, he's looking for a prize fighter.
Indeed, have him come here.
Okay. Mr. Wolfe will see you at 8. So long. I was all set to argue with you about taking the case. You gave in too fast.
Nonsense. I am fascinated by the thought of anyone misplacing a prize fighter. They're usually quite large, aren't they?
They are. But what this guy is worried about is not only finding his boy, but finding him alive.
Gentlemen, it's the bulkiest, balkiest, smartest, and most unpredictable detective in the world. That chair-born genius, Nero Wolfe, created by Rex Stout and brought to you in a new series of adventures over this NBC network in the person of Mr. Sidney Greenstreet. The case of the deadly sellout. That's what my boss, Nero Wolfe, called it. And it almost meant curtains for the firm of Wolfe and Goodwin. But let me give it to you straight right from the beginning. Although you ought to know that it wasn't until it was all over that I knew the very beginning of it myself. It all started in the New York flat of one Brock Rainey.
Yes?
The name is Jerry Fay.
I'm supposed to know you?
Being a very good friend of Pepe Gatto's, it's time you got to know me. May I come in?
Sure. You've got a problem, Miss Fay?
Pepe took a fall at the garden last night against a coffee and bum named Eubanks, right?
As far as I know, Sister Gatto met his match.
Please, Mr. Rainey, do me a favor. Skip the sausage meat. It happens I saw the $1,200 you counted out to him to take a quick dive in the first.
You did.
How else would I know?
Okay, then here's my wrist. Slap it, Miss Fay. I'm a bad boy.
Now, look, who's kidding who? I don't care if Pepe makes himself a few deals on the side. I should worry whether he gives those meat eaters on the benches a run for their ducats. What's it to me?
If you're not worried, Sugar Plum, then neither am I. Also, I'm a very busy man.
Not too busy to pay off, I hope.
Pay off? To who?
To me.
For what?
For keeping it to myself that you collected $5,000 from the Eubanks crowd for getting Pepe to take that dive. Certain people might not like to hear it.
Miss Fay.
Yeah?
Drop dead.
I don't think we understand each other.
Which is just as well. Now get out of here.
There's something else.
Go, bimbo.
Okay, Mr. Rainey. Have it your way. I'll go find someone with a more sympathetic ear. Someone like Lawson. Arnold F. Lawson. So long.
Wait. Where does Lawson come into this?
You asking a stalling. Lawson dropped a sizable piece of change on last night's two-step.
No. Close the door, Jerry.
Oh, yeah. $25,000 to be exact. That's a lot of corn to lose because a cheap fight manager arranges a frame. At least Arnold Lawson might think so.
Sit down.
Who's tired? Look, Mr. Rainey, it goes very simply in only one way. Lawson as yet knows from nothing except that your boy Gatto lost the fight. He may suspect, but he don't know. And he really don't have to know.
Glad to hear you say that.
And I'll be glad to see the shade of 3,000 long green banknotes.
How much?
You heard me, $3,000.
Get out.
Okay, I'm going. To the next phone and call Lawson.
Look, Jerry, give me time, huh? I haven't got that kind of dough right now.
Tell it to Lawson. When he gets through with you, you won't need any kind of dough.
You know, I've got Gatto set for a go with Mellish, the title contender. Gatto can take him. Please believe me, he's going to take him.
So?
So after what happened in the Eubanks fight, the odds on Gatto will be like a war debt. We can clean up.
Listen,
we can make
Heel, I wouldn't trust you from 11:59 to midnight. Get it up. Now. I'll give you 6 hours. After that, Lawson. So long.
on, come on.
Hello?
Hello, Rainey, this is Gatto.
Hiya, Pappy.
Look, the boys dropped in on me at the office at Mindy's. Lawson wants to see me.
What? Lawson?
Look, bum, I'm the one with the cauliflower ears. You heard me, and what do I do?
Nothing.
But...
Don't go near him. Stay home. Let me take care of it.
How? How? What will you do?
I don't know yet, Pappy, but I'll find a way.
How did he find out?
Your girlfriend.
What? She wouldn't do that. She hates the guy.
Hate him or love him, she told him.
I can't believe it.
I suggest you call our little doll Jerry and give her your regards for the double cross. Meanwhile, stay put in your apartment. Don't move.
But Rainey... Hello. Hello.
Mm-hmm.
What on earth are you mumbling about?
The high cost of blonde.
Indeed.
Oh, you can say that again.
I have no intention of doing so.
Okay, be smug. But there must have been a time even in your life when knickknacks from Tiffany figured on the budget.
Phooey.
Not to mention steak dinners and champagne. Or what did you feed your girls? Peppermint lozenges?
Nonsense.
Nonsense?
They preferred lime.
Oh, I'm dying, and he laughs. Mr. Wolf?
Yes?
I have decided that you are giving me a raise.
Archie, this is not a period in which unilateral decisions are wise.
So I'll be a dope and get a raise, huh?
As for your future mental attainments, you may be right. As for a raise...
You want to drive me to gambling? Like betting on fights or going... Okay, it's the doorbell, and I'm answering it.
The name's Rainey. You're Goodwin?
I'm Goodwin. Come in.
Is Wolf in?
Mr. Wolf is always in, unlike prize fighters, I guess. Come on.
Thank you.
Mr. Wolf, this is Mr. Rainey, the man who lost his prize fighter.
How do you do, sir?
I'm not doing so good. Mr. Wolf, you got to help me.
That will depend.
On what?
The fee. I digress. Your problem is what, Mr. Rainey?
Mr. Wolf, I manage a fighter named Gatto. Maybe you've heard of him.
I have not. However, that is of little significance. You are having difficulty with this Mr. Gatto?
I'm not having difficulty with him. I can't find him. Maybe you better let me give you the whole picture, huh?
Very well.
Well, Gatto is an up-and-coming boy, Mr. Wolf. He had a little upset last week with a guy named Eubanks. But everybody knows, in spite of that, Gatto's heading for the big time. I think he'll prove that when he goes against Mellish.
Mr. Mellish being another pugilist, huh?
That's right, Mr. Wolf. Now, Pepe, that's Gatto. Pepe was due at the turf club this afternoon to meet the opposition management and go over the setup. He was due, but he didn't show. I waited all afternoon, and then I started the phone calls and taxis.
The results?
No results. I combed every joint I ever knew him to buy a beer in, and the score was zero. Matter of fact, nobody's even seen him for 4 days.
You would have tried the gymnasiums, naturally?
I did.
Does this pugilist have a home?
Yeah, 206 A Rathburn Street. A penthouse on the roof.
He was not at home during all this time?
It's where I tried first. It was empty as a bank on Saturday afternoon.
I see. And you want me to find him for you?
If Pepe blows this fight, Mr. Wolf, it'll ruin his career.
And the preservation of his career is worth a good deal to you?
I got a check for $2,000 right here.
Archie?
I'll get it. $2,000.
Very well, Mr. Rainey. I should take immediate steps.
I got a cab waiting outside. We can get started right away.
We? I should remain here.
But how do you expect to...
Archie.
Yes, Mr. Wolf.
You will leave with Mr. Rainey. I need information. You might try the Rathburn Street penthouse to start with.
But I've already been there.
With all due apologies, Mr. Rainey, suppose you restrict your activities to pugilists. Archie is a trained observer, you are not. Archie, you will pick up whatever you can at Gatto's apartment. I especially suggest a careful check on his wardrobe.
Wardrobe?
If his clothes are missing, Mr. Rainey, it would indicate that he left voluntarily and deliberately, for whatever reasons he may have had. If they are not... Archie, you will phone me from the apartment after your investigation is over.
Okay.
I shall, in the meantime, devote some thought to the subject.
Huh? For $2,000, all you're going to do is devote some thought?
Mr. Rainey, if I were not a modest man, I would point out to you that you're getting quite a bargain.
Gatto? Gatto?
He's not here, I told you that. I was up here before.
He left the door unlocked?
I had a key. Guess I forgot to lock up after I left.
Now, let's look around. Bathroom?
Yeah.
Empty. It's a nice penthouse. Is that a closet?
Yeah. What do you think? He's playing hide and seek?
Try it.
Okay.
Anything in there?
Nothing I'm looking for.
What's that you found?
A hat.
Well, let's see.
A lady's hat.
Yeah, smart and expensive. Label reads a Madam Yetta original. That bunch of lace and feathers cost somebody a fast $50,000.
Yeah, probably one of his girls left it behind.
And maybe she'll call for it. Come on, we'll take a gander out on the roof.
I took a gander out there. It's bare as a bone.
Uh-uh. What have we got over there with the chimney?
Where?
Over there.
Just an old awning. Got blown down in the storm last month.
Be right with you.
What are you doing?
Looking under it. Oh, brother.
You found him?
Yeah, we found him, chum. A little late. Two holes in his dorsal development and dead as a clay pigeon.
Yeah.
Well, what have you got to say?
Well, now at least the bookies will cancel all bets. We both save our dough.
Yeah. I got to phone Mr. Wolf. And there he was, Mr. Wolf. Under the old canvas awning.
Where's the hat? Oh, this is it.
That's it, boss. Snazzy number, no?
Where'd you find it?
On the floor of the closet.
You're right, Archie. Frothy little bit of millinery caprice. Have you any idea whose it may be, Mr. Rainey?
I wish I did.
You'll have to find out.
Well, how, boss?
The hat is an original. See? The label under the band reads a Madam Yetta original. Tomorrow morning, Archie, you will interview Madam Yetta.
Yes, boss.
And discover in your inimitable fashion for whom she made this chapeau. Hello?
Archie again, Mr. Wolf. Per your instructions, I have just talked to Madam Yetta.
What did you learn?
Madam Yetta tells me she made that hat for a Mrs. Lawson.
Who is Mrs. Lawson?
Wife of an ex-beer hustler who's in the chips and puts on airs. Lives in a penthouse of the Bradford Arms. I was just about to hop a cab and go up there, boss.
Good. Keep this up, Archie. And through sheer practice, you may yet develop a full-blown intelligence.
Well, I'm trying, Mr. Wolf. And after the Lawsons, I do what?
Return here immediately and hurry.
Oh, Mr. Goodwin. My secretary tells me you're a detective.
My boss might argue with you on that, Mr. Lawson.
Your boss?
It happens I work for Nero Wolf.
I see. And you wish to see me about...
About this hat.
Hat? Oh, I see, yeah. Well, Mr. Goodwin, please believe me, I never wear hats like that.
Would your wife be likely to say the same?
My wife? Just what are you getting at?
Would I seem too nosy if I asked how well you and your wife know Pepe Gatto?
How well do we know who?
Pepe Gatto.
The pug?
No, no, not such a pug.
No, huh? I lost 25,000 on him in the Eubanks fight. He asked me, he laid down like a dog.
And did you talk it over with him?
Talk it over with him. Never seen the man in my life.
Not even at the fight?
No, I placed the bet over the telephone. I'd scarcely have anything to do with a character like Gatto, Mr. Goodwin.
You surely won't from here on out, Mr. Larson.
What do you mean?
Gatto is dead.
You don't say.
He was murdered last night.
Murdered?
And what would you say, Mr. Lawson, if I told you that this hat is your wife's and that it was found in a closet in Gatto's apartment?
Now, wait a minute. Let me get this straight. Are you implying...
Not implying. That... Facts are sticking out.
What time was this dumb brute done away with?
Oh, I'd set it at somewhere between 5 and 7 p.m. last night.
Well, you said it very conveniently. Thanks.
Why?
My wife and I drove out of the city at 4:30 yesterday afternoon. Didn't get back until 2 this morning.
And this hat? It took wings and flew into Gatto's closet? Is that the answer?
No, that's not the answer.
Then what is?
this is. A month and a half ago, I was with Celia on a bus stop. She was wearing that hat, and the wind blew it off her head.
I see. And from there, we figure that somebody picked it up, and it finally wound up at Gotham.
You can figure anything you please. Personally, I don't feel in any way obligated to figure anything.
Darling, I was just on my way out, and... Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't realize you were busy.
Yes, I am busy, Celia.
Wait a minute. He's not all right.
Run along now, dear. You'll be late.
But I want to talk to
you. Run along, Celia.
Yes, darling. Sorry. I'll see you later.
Beautiful. Really beautiful.
I've always thought so, Goodwin.
You didn't give me much of a chance to talk to her, did you, Larson?
If I didn't, it's for your own good.
My good? I don't get it.
Celia's a sensitive person, and I won't have her bothered.
And do you mean to tell me you let him scare you?
Let him scare me? Say, will you stop being so fearless with my life? The guy said don't bother my wife, so I didn't bother his wife. It was that simple.
Apparently his wife was not blonde. Answer the phone, Archie.
No, you answer it. Now you've hurt my feelings.
Oh, well. Hello?
I want to speak to Mr. Nero Wolfe.
Mr. Wolfe speaking.
Oh? Is it true that you're interested in the Gatto murder?
Who are you, and how do you know he's been murdered?
The second question is none of your business. And as for the first, call me Jerry. J-E-R-I.
How do you do, Jerry? J-E-R-I. Where do you call?
Would you like to come to an auction?
An auction?
You know, going, going, gone, to the highest bidder.
And what are you placing on the auction block, Miss Jerry?
A few facts. All in good condition and guaranteed to make it a cinch to snag the Gatto killer.
Sounds promising.
Only you'll have to bid against real money.
May I have the address of the auction room?
You'll have no trouble finding it. Your assistant was there last night.
Where?
The penthouse on top of 206A Rathburn Street. The big item goes on at 4 bells.
Yeah? Who is it?
Man in Wolf sent me.
Just a sec.
You're Jerry, huh?
I was expecting the man named Wolf.
Unfortunately for me, honey, when he's expected, I usually show up.
Come on in.
You? See, I'm the legs of the combination. He's the brains. It makes a nice division of labor.
I see. You came in plenty of time.
On the nose is our custom. Where are the rest of the bidders?
Any second now.
Mm-hmm. How many besides me are coming?
One.
Small auction.
But big action.
How'd you happen to decide on this?
I knew Gatto pretty good.
And you were fond of him pretty good, huh?
How did you guess?
Well, you've got a key to this place of his, or you couldn't let yourself in. It adds, no?
Gee, you should have been a detective.
Just what I keep telling Mr. Wolf. Look, tell me, Jerry, darling, this other person who's coming to the auction, who?
The killer.
You don't say. You sure the killer isn't here already?
Look, I didn't kill him.
The story you would like me to believe is that you witnessed the killing, huh? Called the killer and Mr. Wolf and said, come on, kids, you can get me either to talk or shut up, depending on who pays the most, Bennett.
Something like that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, prove you know what you're talking about. Who is the killer? Is it Block Rainey?
Should also have your head examined, pretty boy. I talk for dough and only for dough. Not that I'm mercenary or anything,
but... Okay. Okay, tell me this. How come you saw the killer in the act?
Simple. I was here with Gatto. Called me to come see him. While I was here, the shot came through the window there from the roof.
You know something, sweetheart?
What?
I can't understand how a girl like you, a pretty nice girl under all that paint and powder and Broadway shellac, how you could do a thing like this. You were in love with Gatto, I know that, everybody does. And still you're willing to keep your mouth shut if the killer pays enough. How come? What's the matter, honey? Did I hit a tender spot?
I don't think you understand. Sure, I was in love with the goof. Then along comes this other dame. She's rich and beautiful, and she has everything to give him.
Ooh, do I know her?
Of course you do. She's...
Jerry! Jerry.
She was just about to tell me, and then the shot came through the window from the roof, boss. It's a flat roof outside.
You did? didn't, I suppose, see the murderer?
No. I caught Jerry in my arms. By the time I laid her down on the couch and got out on the roof, the killer was gone.
Get right over here and bring our client with you, if you can find him.
Rainey?
That's right. He has a right to be in on the kill.
Okay, boss. But keep away from that beer till I get there.
Don't be impertinent. I should be busy phoning Mr. and Mrs. Lawson. Meanwhile, I want them here, too. Besides, one bottle won't do any harm. Ah, there they are. Let them in, Archie. You remain seated, Mr. Rainey.
Okay, Mr. Wolf.
Well, come in, Mr. Lawson. Come in.
Mr. Wolf here?
He's here. Nice of you to come.
Anything to help the law.
Ah, Mr. Lawson. Your wife didn't come.
No, Mr. Wolf. She was out when you called. Sorry, I forgot to tell you. I left word with the butler, however.
Mr. Lawson, about 20 minutes ago, a girl named Jerry Fay was killed.
So?
She was killed in your neighborhood, in a flat formerly occupied by one Pepe Gatto.
Well, where would that be?
Maybe your wife knows where the flat would be.
How dare you, sir?
No histrionics, please. Where was your wife when the girl was killed? I'm advising you that if that is an alibi, now's the time to state it.
I wouldn't humiliate Celia by alibiing for her.
And the police will pick her up.
But she didn't kill this girl, Mr. Wolf.
You have reasons for that opinion?
The best of reasons.
I'd be grateful if you'd state them and let me be the judge of their excellence.
One should do. This one. Celia's out in the country visiting her mother.
Oh?
Does that settle it?
Possibly. What's her mother's telephone number?
Why,
Merely a routine check.
Well, can't you take my word?
I'll take her mother's number. Well, Mr. Lawson?
I'm sorry. I hoped you'd buy the story.
What do you mean?
Her mother's been dead for 10 years.
I see.
Well, I don't. What's the idea?
It's known as marital devotion, Archie. I suppose you realize, Mr. Lawson, that in shielding your wife, you're aiding and abetting a murderess?
I haven't stopped to realize anything. When Goodwin brought me that hat, I didn't know what to say.
Well, you pitched me a curve then, too.
Well, I suppose you might call it that, but...
And she didn't lose the chapeau off a bus top.
No, but you've got to understand. Celia's the dearest thing in life to me.
Yeah, so's a lady rattlesnake to its husband.
I suggest it is time for you to be objective in this matter, Mr. Lawson.
What do you want to know?
Tell us where she can be found.
I have no idea.
When is she expected to return home?
Never.
Oh?
You see, we had an argument. I doubt that I'll ever see her again.
Then we are quite on our own, Archie.
To do what?
To make a journey to Gatto's apartment.
Gatto's apartment?
She probably has a key to that popular abode.
But she wouldn't go there, boss.
On the contrary, I am of the opinion that that's just where she would go. Give me my hat.
Don't tell me you're going to stir yourself.
Ah, it's a most unpleasant necessity, Archie. But the lady in question is dangerous and not at all hesitant about indiscriminate gunplay. Get out the car, Archie. We'll make the journey to Rathbun Street penthouse with the hope that Celia Lawson will show up in time to mourn her lost love.
You want me to go along with you too, Mr. Wolf?
Yes, indeed, Mr. Rainey, I do. I trust this chair will hold me.
Should. Biggest chair in the house.
Mr. Wolf.
Yes, Mr. Rainey?
Mr. Wolf, am I to understand that the way you have it figured is that Mrs. Lawson killed Gatto, and then to keep the girl from pinning the crime on her, she killed her too?
What's the matter, Mr. Rainey? Don't you think the theory holds water?
Well, yes. I mean, of course it does.
Mm, thank you. On the other hand, there is room for doubt.
I'm glad to hear you say that, Mr. Wolf. Would you mind explaining?
I'll explain, Mr. Lawson. Mr. Goodwin was in this room when Jerry Fay was killed. Right, Archie?
Right, boss.
He ran as quickly as he could out onto the roof, but your wife was nowhere in evidence.
What difference does that make?
A good deal, I'd say. Wouldn't you, Archie?
Yes, a detail like that would give a jury room for doubt.
Oh, don't be a fool.
How so, Rainey?
Well, I was about to agree with Rainey. I mean, on sheer logic.
I'm afraid I miss your point, Mr. Lawson.
Well, what if Goodwin didn't see her? That proves nothing. She fired the shots and then she ran down the fire escape.
What fire escape?
The one a few feet beyond the chimney.
Mr. Lawson?
Yes?
Who told you there was a fire escape there?
Why,
Yeah, who did? You can't see it from here, Lawson.
Well, I just imagined there might be.
Sensationally accurate imagination, Mr. Lawson. Allow me to congratulate you.
I don't know what you have in mind.
You have in mind to see your wife convicted of the murder of Pepe Gato. And so punish them both for having dared to fall in love.
I love Celia. I worship her.
Yes, that's what you expected me to believe. Hoping, meanwhile, that a hat would convict her. You worshipped her until she became fascinated by a young savage animal known as Pepe Gato.
No.
At that point, the worship shifted into reverse, and you went green with hate. Hate that drove you to climb that fire escape that you know so much about and shoot him in the back.
You're dreaming.
Jerry Fay saw you in the act. And when she was about to divulge your identity to Archie, you killed her too. Meaning to hang her murder on your wife along with the other killing.
That's a lie.
Mr. Lawson, I didn't bring you here to apprehend your wife. There's really no reason why she should come here. I suggested this visit in the belief that you'd betray some guilty knowledge of the place and circumstances. As you have so obligingly just done.
You're clever, aren't you?
Monumentally.
But a little hasty.
So, why?
There's a gun in my hand. Haven't you noticed?
Of course, sir, but yours is not the only gun in the world.
What?
Sit still, Arnold, and don't turn around.
Your wife, Mr. Lawson. Come in, my dear.
Celia, what are you doing here?
I came to get a hat that I'd left in Pepe's closet. It suddenly was clear to me what was in the wind, and I thought I'd better remove all evidence that you could possibly use against me.
Celia, listen, you must understand.
I understand one thing only. Pepe's gone, and you took him away.
Listen, please, if you let me explain, you'll understand.
Yeah?
Please, honey, help me.
Sure, I'll help you.
Celia!
Well, that's all, Mr. Wolf. What now?
Archie, why is it when you drive it always gets so crowded outside?
Will it go tough on her, boss?
Why not? She killed a man in cold blood. Though she actually saved our lives while doing so.
I hope that helps her at the trial.
I hope so, Archie. After all, if she hadn't done what she did, what would have happened to the lobster bisque?
What lobster bisque?
The lobster bisque that Fritz is making for dinner. Hurry, Archie. It really can't be appreciated unless it's eaten hot.
You have been listening to The New Adventures of Nero Wolfe, starring Sidney Greenstreet. Tonight's transcribed story was based on the characters created by Rex Stout. This is an Edwin Fadiman program, produced and directed by J. Donald Wilson. In the cast were Larry Dobkin as Archie Goodwin, and Ann Diamond, Charlotte Lawrence, Gerald Moore, Don Diamond, and Eddie Fields. Next week at this same time, Nero Wolfe and Archie will bring you The Case of the Killer Card. Don Stanley speaking. Three chimes mean good times on NBC. Saturday night is date night, and NBC has a lively lineup of music and fun to help your courting along. Tomorrow, Dennis Day brings you a melodic and mirthful 30 minutes, and then Judy Canova gets together with her gang for a sparkling session of mountain-style song and laughter, followed by singing MC Red Foley and his friends on that exciting parcel of Western tunes and mayhem Grand Ole Opry. Here's Sam Spade, Three Chimes Mean Good Times on NBC.
On the beach, you'll see the girls in their bikinis, as cute as ever, but they never get them wet.
The scene has been...
You knew the job was dangerous when you took it.
Radio production.